Hey, welcome to the Film Podcast. Today, what are we talking about, guys?
Talking about Danny Boyle.
Dude, I'm triple fisting it. I forgot. What are we talking about? I got three beverages over here. I got one more beverage than Kevin does.
Yep.
Kevin's all healthy, though. Two.
And none of his have alcohol in them.
That is true.
I'm going to take a picture of all these drinks. But anyway, for the new listeners, I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
I'm Brandon Bennett.
I'm Kevin.
And today we're talking about the films of Danny Boyle. Hopefully we won't have to split this episode into two-parters, but maybe.
No,
we shouldn't, right?
No. In keeping with Danny Boyle, we will move this thing right along.
All right.
Okay. Imagine a speeding on an open road.
To house music.
In fast motion to house music.
All right. Okay, so how are we going to start it off? You're going to take it from here? You're all prepared? You're all set?
Sure. Well, let's just start with this.
So where was he born?
Danny Boyle, here we go.
1956.
In Manchester.
Yes.
October 20th. born in an Irish Catholic family in Radcliffe, Lancashire. County of Galway. Danny Boyle died, tragically, on February 17th, 2063.
That's going to be creepy if that happens.
Wow, he'd be over 100 years old.
He's young. I did not... Well, he's almost 60 years old.
Yeah.
But he still, feels really young.
Yeah.
Like the stuff he makes.
Yeah.
I hear you. All right. I believe you.
I feel like no one believes me.
All right, so where are we going to start off? We're going to start off with the early stuff, TV stuff?
I didn't revisit or visit most of his TV stuff because most of his TV stuff you can't get, but he started doing a lot of TV series for the BBC, TV movies, Scout, Venus de Milo Instead, Monkees, things I really tried to find, but I couldn't. The first thing we get is Shallow Grave, first feature film. Let's just stick to movies.
All right, done. So we'll start off with Shallow Grave. What year is that?
1994.
All right. So we all saw it, right? Yeah, we're getting a nod from everybody. So give us a synopsis, Brandon, and then we'll take it from there.
Shallow Grave is about three flatmates searching for a new roommate, three friends. They get a roommate who mysteriously dies in the night of an overdose suicide. Is it really clear? I don't think it's clear. I think it's just basically...
They find drugs.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah.
Yeah, they find drugs and he's just lying naked.
Yeah, he's lying naked on the bed. And he has a giant bag of money, and that sets the movie off. Because they take the money, hide the body.
Yeah.
In a...
Deep grave.
Shallow grave.
That's not right.
Sorry. Shallow grave. Shallow grave.
I thought they just dumped him in the ocean.
and this...
I thought it was in a toilet.
This is a pretty cool cast. It's Ewan McGregor as kind of, I guess I would say, one of the leads. It's an ensemble, but he's one of the leads. And then we have Christopher Eccleston. Eccleston?
Eccleston.
Oh, fuck, dude.
Some people may know as Doctor Who.
Yeah. What doctor is he?
Nine.
He is the ninth doctor.
And then we have, what's
right?
his name?
Or is it?
Yeah, no, he's the ninth doctor. Yeah.
Oh, man, I forgot his name. Who's the actor that's in, he's in this movie, and then he's also in Children of Men?
Are you talking about Peter Mullen?
Yes, he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He doesn't have very many lines in this, but he's pretty badass.
He sells four so much things. With the look of his face.
Yeah. Does he play the detective?
No, he's the hood that's chasing him down.
When the guy's getting dunked in the bathtub, he's just sitting there in the chair just wiping water off his pants.
Oh, yeah.
So before we go any further, I want to tell everybody listening, if you haven't seen the movie and you want to see it and you want to have a spoiler-free experience, you could go ahead and if you're listening on an iDevice, you could hit forward next chapter on your iPhone, iPad, and it'll forward to the next movie. So if you're like, I want to save this, I haven't seen this, you could just hit forward right now and it'll go to the next one we're talking about. And, you know, if you haven't seen that one either, you could hit forward again until you get one that you've seen. And that way it doesn't, you know, it's spoiler free for you. So, all right, as we continue.
We should do something where we talk about our review of it. And then before we say something spoilery, then we'll say, okay, this is a spoiler alert or something. So people can listen to what we think of it.
Sure.
before they fast forward.
All right. Well,
that makes sense. No, this totally. Should have been discussed before we got started the podcast. Obviously.
I did not know that we were approaching this territory.
Oh, we were.
I mean, they're watching an episode specifically about the director's work. They should probably just go watch all of his movies.
They probably should. Yeah. Well, I agree.
Actually, I mean, I say that now, but I'm going to argue against that later. So.
But right now we're doing good. Everyone should see Shallow Grave. Shallow Grave is really great.
I do really like it. It's an awesome first movie.
First collaboration with John Hodge.
Yeah.
Who's done a bunch of stuff with him.
Yep.
And his editor, Masahiro Hirakubo.
And what about the cinematographer? Did he use this guy again?
Brian Tufano. Yeah, he used him a few times. He, Danny Boyle, I guess I don't study enough careers to really know if maybe this is a trend, but he seems to stick with people for like two or three movies and then kind of work with new guys. Yeah.
All right, so we'll give it a rating off the top, so that way if people want to, when we start talking about spoilers, they get forward. So I'll start off with me. I'm the first one on the mic, so I like this movie. There's clearly some plot points that, if we're just changed, like the movie would not exist. But besides that, like I liked it. I'd definitely give it. So we're rating everything based on the Letterboxd. It's a film social network site. So if you want to get on there, you can see all our ratings. Yeah, Letterboxd. Just spell it letterboxd.com and then take out the last E, and you'll get to it. There's a link on our website at thefilmpodcast.com. So based on 1 to 5 stars. Oh, I just gave them 5 extra stars. I definitely would go 3.5, 4, but I'm gonna go with 3.5.
I gave it a 3.5 as well.
Yeah, Adam.
I think I gave it a 4.
Well, Jenny, recommend. Would you definitely say people should see it, or you know, on the?
I would probably never see this movie again. I didn't hate it. I thought it was okay. I like other movies more. So I would probably never own it, and I would probably never watch it again. Maybe go see it once. But
it's not very fun.
It's not. And it's kind of, for what they're doing, for the premise, I felt like it was kind of drawn out a little bit.
Well, what was the plot? What were the plot points?
Well, we'll talk about it a little. So, Adam, what's your rating?
So, when I first started my Danny Boyle adventure, this was the first one I watched, and I give it a 4. After making it all the way through, or as far as I could, watching all of Danny Boyle's movies, I went back and I was like, it's a 3.5. Because I'm like, that might just be because after watching a slew of Danny Boyle movies, I don't want to watch another Danny Boyle movie for a while. Like a really long time.
Well, this is the first one that opens up with a fast-paced street scene, curving around street corners.
Over house music.
Going this way and that. With house music. Left field, specifically.
And it's okay for the first time. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
One movie in. But after a couple movies, I just want it to stop.
Ewan McGregor is really good.
Yeah. He is really good.
Yeah. And he is totally.
Well, Chris Ewan Eccleston McGregor. Is really good.
Yeah, he is.
The cast is great.
Brandon, what's your Letterboxd rating?
I would give it a 4, but it would be a while before I revisited it. It's just kind of a mean movie.
Okay.
So I feel like I have to be in like a certain kind of mood. It's just got a real like cynicism to it. Like Ewan McGregor is the only fun thing in the movie, and even him, you know, you don't really sympathize
with
him at all.
He's very fun, but he's also the most cynical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin?
Okay, I'm going to be the one that's different in the group, and I give it a 4.5.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
I've actually watched this movie. I didn't really need to rewatch it for this podcast because I've rewatched it once times, and I'm always tempted to buy it on Blu-ray.
All right. Fucking bold with your 4.5 stars.
I love the psychology of the movie, so that's why.
All right.
Did any of you watch any of the videos on the Criterion?
Before we move forward,
okay,
real quick. Was this first time watching for you? For me, it was like second viewing. Jenny, first time. Adam,
This was my second time. I think I know I'd seen it at least once before.
Your first time,
first viewing. Adam, Kevin,
fourth
viewing. Wow. All right, I could see the 4.5 stars.
Gave it 4.5. Yeah.
All right, now we can get into spoiler territory. So.
Oh, okay.
All right. All right. Let's
That's
get
what
into
we're
it.
Doing. Spoiler territory. Okay. Well, what are the? It's very convenient. Everything is very convenient.
Yeah. So,
but what?
All right. So the movie starts off, and they finally get the roommate, who's very interesting, and you know all this stuff, and he basically commits. I don't know if he commits suicide or he just ODs. But
I'm guessing he ODs.
I think he just ODs.
Wait, should we play the clip first?
Oh.
Does the clip, because I mean, it sounded before like the clip is from the beginning where it's them being douchey.
Yeah, it's a
which clip is from, my problem with the movie. They're very unlikable.
They're very unlikable.
From yeah. the beginning.
But I think that's kind of, that works for it. Because it's like, it's what people say about Seinfeld. They're all assholes,
mm-hmm.
but they're good friends and they do stuff for one another.
Yeah.
Which, that does not hold water with this movie, though.
Yeah.
They don't do everything for one another. Okay, so what if, Shallow Grave is what if the gang in Seinfeld found a bag with millions of dollars?
See, that I would see over
would
and over.
Would that just tear them apart? Yeah.
So you want to play the clip?
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
So what's his name? I don't know. Campbell or something?
Cameron.
Cameron? Really? That's right. What? Well, are you comfortable, Cameron? Yes, thanks. Have you seen the flat? Yes. And you like it?
Yes, it's great.
Yes, it is, isn't it? And we all like it. The room's nice too, don't you think?
Yes.
Spacious, bright, well-appointed, all that sort of stuff. All that sort of crap.
Well, yes.
Yes, so tell me, Cameron, just tell me, because I'd like to know, what on earth could make you think we'd want to share a flat like this with someone like you?
I mean, my first impressions, and they're rarely wrong, is that you have none of the qualities we normally seek from a prospective flatmate. Talking here about things like presence, charisma, style and charm, and I don't think we're asking too much. I don't think we're being unreasonable. Dick David here, for instance, a chartered accountant he may be, but at least he tries hard.
All right. Well, douchebags.
Also, another Danny Boyle trait is the opening montage.
Yeah.
With a little bit of narration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christopher Eccleston gives a nice little narration.
Yeah. All right. So basically, the guy turns up. He's dead. I don't know why you do drugs naked. I don't.
I think you do drugs and then you get naked.
All right.
I mean, he's a criminal who's stealing money from gangsters, so that's not a surprise that he's doing drugs and getting naked and probably jerking off.
All right. You out of the drugs.
I think some criminals might be offended by yeah. the implication that they're just hedons who just have to masturbate all the time.
Just go ahead and hit me up at Twitter. It's KZUBERBIER. I will get right back to you.
If you are on drugs naked and not jerking off.
And a
criminal. We want to know.
And a criminal.
Call in.
And a criminal. I'm not speaking to anybody that isn't a criminal, okay? And I'm all talking right. about like felonies, not like just shoplifting.
No misdemeanors.
Yeah, not bullshit. Yeah.
No misdemeanors, guys.
People who mug people at ATMs.
Yes.
Like this guy does.
And bash their head into it.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. All right. So, my thing is they find the body and they find all this money and they say, we want to keep the money, but why don't they just keep the money and call the police? Like, the movie would still work.
Yeah. And they're very cavalier about, like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to bury the body. One of us is going to dismember it.
Well, at first they're like, just leave the body there.
I know.
Yeah.
At first they're like, just leave the body there. And
yeah.
My thing is like, whoa. My first thing is like, hey, let's get rid of this body and burn all our DNA off this body.
There's a shot of Christopher Eccleston going to work, and I'm like, it has to smell now.
Yeah.
Like, it's starting to smell really bad now.
Yeah.
So
my thing.
So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a couple of those plot points that I think are like, oh, if you could,
the cops aren't going to know that the money is there. If there's a dead body, it's like, oh, there must have been money here.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, the other thing is that they're all like, well, then only one of us should do it, because if all three of us do it, then it's, if just one of us does it, then it's all on you. And like, okay, the way that it should be is if you help dismember this body, then you get some of the money. If you do not do anything, then you don't get shit.
Well, it should be based on what you do.
I don't like that, yeah. that they put it all on him
yeah.
because then he should be the only one that gets the money.
Exactly. I'd say if you do a limb, you get a certain percentage, you know?
Yeah, like pirates.
Yeah. So.
But,
yeah.
I mean, you can't argue that they put it all on him, because at first he was putting it all on everybody before they decided to draw the straws. He was like, I can't do this. I can't do it.
Well, then he shouldn't have gotten any of the money. Fine. Then those two get it.
Man, you're just not giving him any money. What about just like a bigger or smaller share? They're still friends.
I mean, maybe a little bit. Maybe.
Are they really,
I probably
though?
Wouldn't, though.
Well, yeah. I would point to Trainspotting for like that, when Kevin McKidd's like, he's a fucking psycho, but he's a mate, you know? So what are you going to do?
So what I learned so far is that if we have to kill somebody and dismember them because they have money, I definitely want Jenny on my team, because she has the right, you know, right theory of like disbursement by amount of work you do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I just, if I couldn't get the guts up to cut this guy up,
then don't give,
then
me, a share.
Don't give me anything. Maybe the only thing that you might want to give someone
that
something
changes
to,
the second Jimmy, we're actually talking
Jimmy's
about money.
Jimmy's a fan
on
of
the
meritocracy
table.
Where the work you put in is equal to
yes.
what you get.
Well,
yes.
maybe you get a, you give him a little bit just to keep his mouth shut about yeah. the murder.
Just get to get his beak wet a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you do that. But other than that, mm-mm.
All right. All
You're
right.
putting so much. This guy's like going to go crazy. Like you could tell before
it's
it
their
even
own
happened.
Fault.
You knew
yeah.
he was going to go crazy.
Yeah. 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 Like you make this dude who didn't want to do anything in the first place dismember
yeah.
a body.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen.
Shit's going to get
do
bananas.
You? I've got a question for the gang. Calling us the gang because if we find money, we're going to be like the gang.
yeah.
Do you think Alex was dead at the end of the movie or is he alive?
The Christopher
Ewan McGregor.
Oh, Ewan McGregor.
He's alive.
He's still alive.
Yeah.
yeah.
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That was actually his line to the cop was added in post production.
Oh, really?
To clarify that he was alive.
Oh, wow. People thought he was a ghost or something.
Wait, what was his line that he said to the cop?
Well, I mean, the way they
I can't remember what the line was, but they kind of leave it. You could interpret it as being like, "Oh, well, that's his spirit laughing at him or something."
Oh,
like a movie,
yeah.
you know, something
yeah.
that would be in a movie. Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
yeah. But overall, it was fun, maybe a little too drawn out for this type of movie, but I definitely, like Kevin kind of brought up, like, I love the psychology of the movie, the fact that they're kind of all going a little crazy in their own way.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing is, sorry, the other thing, the weird thing that I, that was about it was that if he had already switched the money out of the bag, why didn't he just let Christopher Eggleston and the girl go?
He was trying to.
He was trying to.
No, remember he, like, at the end, he ends up, like, he was like, you shouldn't have hit her. And then he like goes after him.
Because
that
he
was
hit
because
her.
David, he hit her.
Yeah. And then David drove him out of the room.
Yeah.
But he was going to let them go.
He was like cowering in the room. And David was like, he yanks on like the phone and tries to get them to come out of the room when they're leaving.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like you could have just still let them go.
Also, too, money.
If it's about money, that I feel like.
Well, but he was in love
well,
with her.
That I'm
was
happy so, to know that where, when he punches me, you don't avenge me.
That's where everything falls apart. Is because
I guess
so,
you're
like,
right. I guess he okay.
Yeah,
because
they were
sense.
All or the friendship. It's like they were really just both in love with her, apparently.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we're just waiting for the other one to like fall by the wayside.
Okay.
But yeah, it was like he hit her, so then he goes after him and.
Then
so,
all shit.
Hijinks ensue.
Yeah.
So here's my complaint. That's not really a film complaint. Is if I was one of the characters in the movie, as soon as you start drilling holes through the ceiling, I'd be like, whoa, what the fuck? The deposit on this apartment, it's a nice apartment. The deposit must have been like really, really a big amount.
But they had the money.
Scared of him.
They had the money.
I don't care. I'm like, dude, that's coming out of your deposit, bro. Like, you're not getting
you're covering
any deposit,
the deposit
back.
It's coming
yeah.
out of your cut?
Yeah.
Of the money that you're hiding.
Well, how do you know that they are actually paying a deposit? There's a lot of apartments that you can actually own, and then London seems like the type of place where you'd actually own your apartment.
Then I would definitely be like, that's coming out of your cut then. If we try to sell this place, it's going to cost us a fortune to drywall all these holes, bro.
That
too
was
many
a
holes.
Pretty good shot up in the attic with
yes,
all the light.
Yeah,
yes.
That was
awesome.
That was a cool shot. This is also...
Also, Ewan McGregor looks good in the dress.
Yeah.
He
does.
Yeah.
And it's hardened up a bit.
The yeah. scene where it's cutting back and forth between Chris Eggleston, like him digging with the red light.
Yeah.
That looked very
oh,
cool,
yeah.
too.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's nice. Like, yeah. it's a nice...
Really well lit, really
first,
well yeah. filmed.
There's something about shot. First films being Hitchcockian. I was like, all right, I love movies, so I got to make my first movie a Hitchcock-type yeah. movie. And yeah. it's totally Danny Boyle doing... Like, it's kind of a perfect merging of the two.
Yeah.
It's clearly Danny Boyle doing Hitchcock. Because he had a clear voice early on. And then it's just his take
yeah.
on Hitchcock
well,
concept.
So John Hodge wrote it. Did anyone watch the video that was on the Criterion of them like shopping it around?
Yeah.
At the Edinburgh Festival?
Yeah.
When they get Sean Connery on the phone while he's filming Rising Sun in Los Angeles?
Wait, no, I didn't see this video. What's going
because
on?
Because they're talking to someone. I think it might be Robbie Coltrane from what? Who is he in Harry Potter?
Oh.
Isn't he
Hagrid? Hagrid.
Yeah, Hagrid. Yeah. And they're like, oh, you got to get Sean Connery, like as a joke. And so they get his number and they call him while he's on the set of Rising Sun saying they're from the festival. And he doesn't end up asking him at all for the part. So he's like, no, I don't think Sean Connery's right. So I think it was a gag, but they got Sean Connery on the phone.
That's pretty cool.
He should have because as much as I'm
who would
anti
Connery?
Danny Boyle, I don't know, but Shadowgrave is way better than Rising Sun.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
All right, so are we ready to move on?
Next I think so.
So again, let's go over our rating again, just in case somebody missed it. 3.5.
3.5.
3.5.
4. 4.5.
There you go. All right, so what are
we
talking about next?
We are talking about, I think, what Adam was talking about his, like, it's a first film thing. You've got the kind of cynicism of, like, being, like, in your 20s. It's a gang of friends. I think that translates better into Trainspotting.
Wait, but was he in his 20s?
Danny Boyle?
Yeah.
Well, John Hodge was.
Okay.
The writer.
Okay.
But I think
we'll get into him later.
John Hodge?
Well, my problem is with John Hodge.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, it's 1996's Trainspotting.
All right. Do we have a clip? Should we start off with the clip?
Yeah.
Choose life. Choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a fucking big television. Choose washing machines, cars, compact disc players, and electrical tin openers. Choose good health, low cholesterol, and dental insurance. Choose fixed interest mortgage repayments. Choose a starter home. Choose your friends. Choose leisure wear and matching luggage. Choose a three-piece suite on hire purchase and a range of fucking fabrics. Choose DIY and wondering who the fuck you are on a Sunday morning. Choose sitting on that couch watching mind-numbing, spirit-crushing game shows, stuffing fucking junk food into your mouth. Choose rotting away at the end of it all, pissing your last in a miserable home, nothing more than an embarrassment to the selfish, fucked up brats that you've spawned to replace yourselves. Choose your future. Choose life.
There you go.
That's how the movie opens.
Yeah. All right. So before we get into spoilers, again, we're talking about Trainspotting.
Another fast-paced camera move at the beginning with narration montage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I definitely recommend this movie. It was my fifth viewing of it. No, probably more. Probably like 10th, 11th viewing of it. Still love it.
This one's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay. Streaming on Netflix.
Netflix, Amazon.
As of August 2013, just in case you're listening to next year.
And Hulu Plus.
And Hulu Plus.
So I definitely give it, this is my 5-star Trainspotting.
Yeah, completely.
Jenny?
I did 4.5.
Ooh.
5.
And Jenny, Jenny, first viewing?
No, I've seen it a million times.
Adam, how many stars?
5 stars.
5 stars. What viewing? Many times?
Umpteenth.
Okay.
This was the first Danny Boyle movie I ever saw, and I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. I have no idea. A bunch of times. 5 stars.
Okay.
A bunch of times, and I'm going to pay Letterboxd to give me 2 extra stars, and I'm going to go with 7 stars.
Oh.
Yeah. You're going to take stars from
Kevin's
other movies.
Up in the ante tonight at every turn.
I'm going to agree with Kevin. I have a lot of leftover stars from other later movies. I'll just tack them onto this one.
Foreshadow.
All right, so now we can get into spoilers.
It's about heroin.
It's about heroin.
Yeah.
And how awesome it is.
Well,
yes. Basically. Because nothing's as awesome like suppositories and falling into toilets.
The worst toilet in Scotland.
And throwing shit on your girlfriend's family.
Oh, I forgot about that when I saw it. There's so many moments that I totally forgot about until they happened again.
So give us the IMDb synopsis, or just give us a synopsis.
Oh, God. I don't know. A bunch of fucked up assholes do heroin and drink and fight all the time.
And you see the different consequences of all their lives, basically.
Yeah, yeah. You see how each one's addiction, specifically, kind of ruins them or takes over their lives, and how they don't have any control over their future unless they take control of their addiction. Yeah. Whether that's heroin, alcohol, just fighting like Begbie.
Yeah.
Which, Robert Carlyle, why is
Scary as fuck. Why is
he always in bad stuff now?
I don't know.
Don't let Savannah hear you say that, because she loves Once Upon a Time.
Hey, I like Stargate Universe, and I'm saying it.
All right, so
he's the only reason I can sit through Once Upon a Time.
I bet.
Oh my God, please, Mr. Gold, show up again and say something crazy.
They're going to have Ariel this season. Coming soon. All
right,
so sorry,
list up some of the cast, because it's got a great cast.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor, Kevin McKidd, Johnny Lee Miller, Robert Carlyle,
Ewan Bremmer.
Ewan Bremmer.
Who had played Renton in the play before the movie.
Peter Mullen.
Yes.
Peter Mullen again, yeah.
Kelly MacDonald.
Yeah.
So I just realized Renton's dad is the badass dad from Braveheart also, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about each one kind of individually. I like to get into that. So,
okay,
Renton
playing a lot like Ewan McGregor starts, like he's kind of playing the same character, the fast talking, funny, smart, yeah, like hyper smart.
As in Shallow Grave.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, even though Renton is a criminal and a heroin addict, I think Renton is much more likable than...
Well, that's what I was saying about the transition from Shallow Grave into this, okay, where it has a lot of the same stuff, but the attitude is totally different. Like, yeah, as far as, like, this could be really cynical, but it's not. It's joyful even when it's horrific.
I'm just going to say this. He peaked at his second film. This is his best movie. As much as I love a later movie, this is his best movie.
I think I'd agree.
Yeah, no, I'd agree.
I definitely agree. This is his best movie.
And it is totally watchable. Insanely watchable.
There's one more. This ties for my number one.
The only reason this is a 4.5 is because I like the other one so much more.
Oh. Okay.
I'm interested to know which other one that is. You're a wild card here.
I'm guessing it's the one she possibly owns.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her DVD collection.
Actually, I don't think she owns it.
No, I don't own it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. All right. So I love everybody in this. Everybody's like amazing. Like just at the top of the game. Like even like going back and seeing like when I started watching Rome, I'm like, where did this guy come from?
Yeah,
and Kevin McKinnon. I didn't make the correlation that he was in Trainspotting. Like he was both amazing in Rome, but going back and I'm like, oh wow, like look at him. He's really young here and he's fucking amazing.
Seriously, it's firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
However many cylinders is the best, that's how many cylinders, yeah, and I mean, firing on all of them.
The way one of the things that I love about Boyle is the way he uses music, and he picks some of the best songs that just enhance scenes.
I agree with that here.
Some of the movies, no.
But I'm rewatching other stuff, I'm like, fucking stop.
Yeah.
Just stop.
Yeah. This is
perfection.
He comes into his...
Perfection.
It's everything that he likes to... Wait, can we get a needle drop? Can we do that?
Can we get a
needle drop? He said needle drop.
Because, that's one of the... That's like one of the new... I've been a movie geek for how long? I never realized that when you use a music cue from an actual song, it's called needle drop until recently, so...
Oh, that's the technical term?
I learned about it when Jon Favreau interviewed Martin Scorsese.
Me too. Which I just watched for the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's called needle drop when you do a song insert an existing... music track.
Well, I stand corrected. He is amazing at it.
Yes. Well, in this movie, yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. We get it.
Perfect. Like every beat.
Skip ahead to find out what Adam hates.
Yeah. Kelly MacDonald. A really young Kelly MacDonald. Mm-hmm.
That intro to Kelly MacDonald with the blondie.
Yes.
Yes. Is one of the greatest things in cinema.
Yeah.
Like that slow
awesome
push onto... That slow needle drop push right into Kelly MacDonald is amazing.
And in this movie, there's full frontal from both of them, isn't it?
Oh, there's lots of... That was in Child's
Grave,
there's
lots of nudity.
There's lots of penis everywhere. Yeah. Lots of penis, a lot of boob.
Which kind of is cool because it kind of takes away... it's more realistic. I hate when, like, you see a couple that just had sex and they're like, they're putting on their clothes like while strategically covering themselves.
There's
with
a convenient shadow, dude.
And I'm like, no. If you're going with living truthfully under the imaginary circumstances of the movie, you're failing because these guys are like everything's perfect. It's kind of like it turns into like Austin Powers. Like there's like there's someone has a drink blocking them with the camera.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have a series of mirrors that direct the lights, so there's different shadows. So after we're done, it's like, wait, where did everything go?
Yeah. He taped the floor so he knows where to stand for all the best light positions.
He is also technically European, and they're their commercials have nudity. So
So. Well,
also in this movie, like the montage showing each one of them having sex, at that night is so amazing.
Attempting to have sex,
or attempting to have sex. Because
really,
each reason why they don't have, except Ewan McGregor, he's the only successful one.
Sick Boy seems like he probably got laid.
No, Sick Boy. Okay, so Begbie is with the transsexual.
Transsexual, yeah.
That's later.
Spud,
that's
a different scene.
Oh, is that Spudder? That later?
That's the later scene.
That is later.
Yeah, that is. Yes.
So, because they're in the bar. I just rewatched this. Like, even though I was talking about like my aversion, like I needed a break from Danny Boyle, I'm like, all right, well, Trainspotting doesn't count because it's perfect. So I watched that before I came. But yeah, so in this montage, you only see Spud, Renton, and...
Tommy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have to ask, do you guys think that Renton screwed up Tommy's life? by taking the sex tape? Or do you think...
No.
No.
No?
No.
You think he would have been fucked up
That's
that way?
Too many steps removed.
What really? Are you talking about?
Yeah.
He takes the tape, his girlfriend dumps him, he wants to do heroin. Mm-hmm. That happens in a 10-minute period in the movie. 10 minutes. Not even 10 minutes.
I think it's that they're friends that kills him more than anything. And I think that's what the movie says outright, is the fact that all these people are together are poison.
Exactly, because it plays later when Renton starts cleaning up his life, and then, oh, here comes Sick Boy and Begbie, and they start screwing up his life again.
Yeah.
It's true.
So it's really just the fact that they're friends.
Yeah.
And Tommy's the only one that doesn't come, because he's stuck doing heroin in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But it's still all tied to... Well, okay, so regardless of whether or not he took the tape, you still think Tommy would have done heroin?
Yes, I think eventually he would have. Hanging out in that group.
I think if not...
I also think they would have broken up at some point anyways, even whether with the sex tape or without the sex tape.
It's true. He did go see Iggy Pop instead of...
Yeah, they would have broken up.
Yeah.
I think something...
So he was looking for an excuse.
Yeah.
Yes, something else would have happened.
I got you.
And then he'd do heroin.
Okay, but still... Okay, it's weird blaming it on Renton, but so I think it's like the combination. Okay, so Renton taking the tape, his girlfriend leaving him, and then that tirade that he goes on about... It's Shite being Scottish when he's trying to get them out into nature.
Yeah.
So it's not, I guess it's not just Renton. You're right. It's the group.
Yeah.
It is the collective pulling him back.
Yeah.
I like that. That works.
And
it really helps that I just watched it.
Yeah. Everybody's great. And I like Spud's when he's going on the job interview.
His job,
it's very much.
I have a clip of that if you want to hear it.
I do, but wait. Is it me or. When you eventually watch Good Will Hunting, was it very reminiscent of this scene in this movie?
With this job interview?
Ben Affleck's character, Chucky.
I think in Good Will Hunting, there's not a
job.
I think in Good Will Hunting, there's not a false set of confidence, whereas with the drugs, I think it gives you this, like it gives Bud this false sense of confidence, so it's a different type of interview than Chucky gets.
But
because Chucky controls the room.
That's true.
And Spud doesn't want the job.
Yeah.
Well, neither does Chucky. Chucky's there. He's doing it. The interview for Will.
Oh, right.
So he just extorts money from the interview.
But the fact that he's able to extort money from somebody, that means he controls the room. The looks on the interviewers' faces are like, what the fuck is going on with this guy?
All right, you want to play a clip?
Yeah. Okay. So him and Renton are at the cafe, and then Renton gives him a little bit of speed to kick him up during the interview.
To give him confidence.
Wait,
just a little
speed?
Bit.
No.
When the Craig Newton, I just put down to Royal Edinburgh College to help get the job. There's too much discrimination in this town, man, because they're both schools, right? And we're all in this together. And I wanted to put across the general idea rather than the details. Like, people get all hung up on details. Like, which school did I go to? How many O grades did I get? Could be like six, could be none. It's not important. What is important is that I am, yes?
Mr. Murphy, do you mean that you lied on your application?
No. Well, yeah. Oh, yes. Only to get my foot in the door. Sure, now that's just having that like.
But you were referred here by the Department of Employment. There was no need for you to get your foot in the door, as you put it.
Yeah, cool. Whatever you say, man. Sorry. You're the man, the dude in the chair. I am merely here. Like, obviously, I'm here, like, but...
Mr. Murphy, what exactly attracts you to the leisure industry?
In a word, pleasure. Like, my pleasure in other people's leisure.
Do you see yourself as having any weaknesses?
Oh, yes, because, like, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, actually. Yes, I am. See?
he's awesome in this.
Yes.
He's so good.
Yeah.
All right.
Wait, is Ewan Brimmer actually Scottish, too? Or is he just really good?
I'm pretty sure he's actually Scottish. Yeah.
I mean, he is really good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Scottish.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. So
you got to roll that.
Anything else we want to talk about?
I can't do it.
How about
Edinburgh?
The scene where he's going through withdrawals, where they lock him in the room. Oh,
the baby crawling.
Yeah.
Stolen baby scene.
Yes.
How many times has that scene been ripped off? Too many to count.
Yeah. Too many.
Although the only one that comes to mind off the top of my head is Family Guy, but I'm no after there's more than just Family Guy that's ripped off that scene.
Wait a minute. Family Guy ripped something off?
I know that was the easy one.
That's absurd. Yeah.
And also the toilet scene.
Yep, of course.
When he
dirtiest toilet in Scotland.
Yep.
So the scene is he takes a suppository.
Right.
Which is what? What is he taking?
He's taking an opiate suppository because he's trying to kick. So but, he wants, but he needs one last fix.
Yeah. He goes to the dumbest drug dealer in the world.
Yeah, instead of Mother Superior.
Yeah.
Peter Mullen's character.
And then he gets diarrhea. And he loses
because heroin is makes you constipated.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which I actually pulled that fact out the other day. I was like, "Did you know heroin makes you constipated?"
A lot of drugs make you constipated. Yeah.
But that scene is fucking sick.
And no one's even touching the baby scene. It's brutal.
Yeah.
It is brutal.
The baby
and
scene.
And it works just because the whole movie is so joyful, and you're like, "Oh, this kind of looks like fun, right?"
That's when it gets like real. When you're like, "Oh." You know, like it's kind of
But which baby scene? Because the baby,
when they find the baby.
That's when shit gets real.
Although even every shot of the baby just crawling around while they're shooting up always puts it in context.
Especially because it's like laughing at times, and it's just like, oh, something's gonna. It's just he's just hinting something's gonna happen.
But you know what makes it even weirder though is to think about the fact that when they weren't shooting those scenes, Angelina Jolie was upstairs skating around on roller skates.
Because
you didn't know that?
No.
Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie were married while they were making this movie. And so in that flat where they're filming 96. Those scenes, in the level above, Angelina Jolie's just roller skating around all the time.
Oh, my God.
Why?
Because she's there.
So
hanging
you
out.
You actually blew my mind in a different way.
That I knew that?
No. That Johnny Lee Miller made this at the same time as Hackers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's horrible.
I thought this was like way before Hackers, but it wasn't. It's the same year.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So let's talk about the baby scene. The baby scene is kind of, you could really separate yourself from this movie, from the story, by saying, oh, it just, you know, it kind of, it's a fun movie until it gets really real with the kid when it's dead. And when, like, that, the camera work in this movie is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just, like, when they're shooting up, the reveal of the baby, a lot of camera work that's like, it's really
One of my favorite shots is after Tommy's diagnosed. There's like the shot where he like slides up a wall.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that shot so
much. When Tommy slides up the wall, that's in the scene when Renton, that's the baby scene still. That's the crawling on the scene where it's like, because the baby comes in and Tommy comes in and she's singing on top of his dresser. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. But I mean, just every shot really of the...
And house music.
When you first see the baby and it's just walking on... Way impression
when you,
it pulls you out of everything, and reminds you of like what a responsibility is.
Oh,
because
yeah.
otherwise it's just them like goofing off, having a good time. They don't have any money.
I don't know what that. What's
responsibility?
Yeah, what's that?
It's a thing that like you have to do because of like social constructs or personal relationships or an obligation to a job. That could be one. That could be a responsibility.
I don't know. It sounds like you're describing obligations.
Yeah, it is an obligation. If you have a child, you do have an obligation, but it's more of a heavy, you know, you have a responsibility. You have to respond to their every need.
So I can't just shoot up heroin while my baby's in the other room?
Well, no, you could.
You could.
That's the beauty of free will.
Oh.
I don't want to get into free will.
But all in all, great movie, great camera work.
Amazing. And all around amazing.
Yes, this movie's perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the magical realism of, like, the whole... It's such, like... It consumes you in such a way that when you're digging going back to the toilet scene, like he's digging the suppositories out of the toilet, but he dives into the toilet. And then when it goes to the next scene and he's all soaking wet, like it's just a continuation of the magical realism. Like,
yeah.
I really dig that part. And something that he talks about later on a different commentary, I only listened to one commentary, to be honest, and it was on 28 Days Later, but he's talking about, this is something else I listened to. Oh, I listened to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell, another podcast, which you should listen to, which is awesome. And he talks about how much he loves Nicholas Rogue and how Nicholas Rogue's movies are imperfect and he likes that imperfection. And in listening to other things, hearing him mention things where it's like, all right, well, yeah, that doesn't make sense, but we liked it, so we left it in. And that just kind of goes together with this whole idea of enjoying imperfection and appreciating imperfection.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate certain aspects of his work as a whole, but there are really only two movies that I love.
All right.
I have a question. How at the end...
why didn't you raise your hand?
Excuse me?
Yes.
Me? Pick Jenny? Me? How does he get by without them ever finding him? Again. Like after he leaves with the money.
Oh, well, he wants to make a sequel.
Yeah. porno. Yeah.
It's supposed to come out.
Irvin Welsh wrote a book where...
It takes place 10 years after Trainspotting.
And they all get together.
Is it 10 or 20? I thought it was 20. Well, because the sequel is going to be 20. Longer, yeah. He wants the sequel to be 20,
but I believe the book is actually 10 years.
Okay.
And they all get together and make pornography.
Oh, okay. So they find... And they're not mad at him anymore?
Well...
So that's... Porno is...
Porno is about porno.
Porno...
But that's the sequel to Trainspotting?
Wait, isn't that they want to make...
That's the sequel to Trainspotting.
Pornography? Because when I was reading it, it sounds like there's a lot of shit going on in their life, but the backdrop is like... is pornography.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's more layered than...
I liked his joke. Pornography. He made a joke that he wanted to ask Cameron if he could call it T2.
Well, Danny Boyle even said, like, man, the book is all right, but I think we can make a really good movie out of it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited to see a sequel to this.
Yeah, I think it'd be good. Yeah.
I just hope Ewan comes back.
Well, he apologized.
Yeah.
He did apologize.
Not Ewan, but
Boyle. Well, we'll get into that later.
Boyle, but he hasn't said he's definitely coming, signing on. Yeah.
Apologize to who?
Wait,
we'll talk about it a little bit. Yeah.
In one movie?
Yeah.
Save for the podcast.
Two movies, yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the next movie.
Which I would argue, let's see if this holds up, is his weirdest movie by far. What?
Strumpet?
Yeah, Strumpet.
This isn't... No.
No, I'm kidding.
Although that might be. I didn't say Strumpet.
A Life Less Ordinary.
A Life Less Ordinary.
1997.
The crazily cynical romantic comedy.
Yes.
Wait, but you didn't see Vacuuming Naked in Paradise.
No. Those are still later.
Right. But you said this is his weirdest movie, okay. So you don't know.
Yes, I'm at a handicap.
You don't know.
I'm at a -2 Danny Boyle handicap.
And this, again, directed by Danny Boyle, written by
John Hodge. Again, Brian Tufano is a DP.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, okay.
Also, editor, Masahiro Hirakubo.
So that's three. Same writer, cinematographer, editor. All right. I didn't have time to see this movie.
Have you not seen it at all?
I've seen it before,
right? When it first came out, and I don't remember a lot of the plot points.
There's a reason you don't remember a lot of the plot points, because it's fucking retarded.
Yeah. So, based on what I remember, I only gave it a 1 star.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I remember it more fondly than it actually is.
Yeah.
Wait, so your memory of it...
My memory of it is...
Is more fond than the actuality of the movie.
Yes.
So, let's go down. So, I gave it a 1 star. Jenny?
2.5.
Whoa. Nice.
That's high.
I really want to know what kept it from a 3.
I kept going back and forth. I still can't decide. By the end of this discussion, I might be a 3 again. It keeps going back and forth between 2.5 and 3.
All right, let's sell it.
Because well, I'll explain later.
1. Adam? 1?
1 star.
Brandon?
I might have to agree with 2.5. 2.5 sounds good.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to agree with 2.5, possibly 3.
Wow,
yeah. There's
we're alone.
Exactly.
On there.
Holly Hunter and Delroy Lindo
are the only
are the shit in this.
Yeah, Holly Hunter.
That's why it has 1 star.
Holly Hunter is the only reason to see
this movie. That's exactly my only reason that it might be a 3. Is
okay.
Of
we just high fived Holly Hunter. Is that a podcast first? Is that a film podcast first?
High
fiving over
is.
Holly Hunter.
Yeah. Yes,
and for 1 star. All right, so now we get into spoilers. So,
Ewan McGregor plays a janitor.
Yes.
Works for a rich dude.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're starting off with the wrong...
Oh, well, okay.
Okay. So apparently angels are...
We open at Heaven headquarters.
Everything's white.
Because it's heaven.
Racist.
Because it's heaven.
It's except not for racist. This one black guy.
Except Delroy Lindo.
This one black guy.
So go on.
I
was trying to think of a Delroy Lindo joke. And their sergeant, I guess, captain. He's the chief.
Chief Gabriel.
Dan Hedaya.
Awesome.
Is talking to the down and out partners of Delroy Lindo and Holly Hunter, two angels whose job it is to make, very specifically, men and women fall in love, which was weird. I get the time. No one's really thinking about that necessarily. But it's weird that there's a lot of lines in the movie about making
it's
men
very
and women
specifically
fall in love.
Men and women.
Yes. From the very beginning, like that's he says, your job is to, or like our job here is to make men and women fall in love. And
So the movie opens up like it's predicated on the fact that Holly Hunter and Delroy Lindo are buddy cop angels.
Yeah.
And buddy cop angels in this world that
John Hodge.
John Hodge just created. Their sole duty is to get men and women to fall in love. But every case that they've had has ended in either divorce or acrimony or just people separating and just
this
unhappy.
This is the last case.
And so, this is their last chance.
Otherwise, they get imprisoned on Earth.
if they were the main characters in the movie, it would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But instead, then the film shifts to these two terrible people, one of whom is an annoying...
hate her.
Louse, and one is just a bitch. I'm sorry.
I hate her.
I don't
so
use
much.
That word
Everything
lightly.
She does. I hate her.
I still kind of like Ewan McGregor, though. He still has a lot of charm.
He's still a little likable. Yeah.
Ewan McGregor himself is charming, but the character is a fucking
I think we can all agree the most unlikable part about Ewan McGregor in this movie is that goddamn hair.
Oh, it's terrible. Except in the dream sequences.
Yes, except
when
in the
they
dream
let him
sequences.
Slick it back. It's like, dude, do not give Ewan McGregor bangs.
I don't even remember that being a thing in the mid to late 90s. That's the problem. Like, frosted tips, I get that. Yeah. But I don't even remember that kind of thing being a hairstyle. I remember that being weird at the time.
His bangs?
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
well,
it was always weird.
It's like a half mullet thing.
It's a mullet.
Yeah?
It's a mullet with bangs.
Yeah.
All right. Bangy mullet.
But you know what I got out of this? Well, I watched a trailer. To remind myself of the
That's the only clip I have, by the way. This movie is so unpopular that you cannot find... I had to order it on Amazon. You cannot find a clip of it anywhere.
We're not playing
the trailer.
We're not playing a clip.
We're not playing the trailer?
Well, no. I mean, we'll just post the trailer on the website.
Yeah, it's really awful.
All right, so here's the thing, is that what I got from this movie is, oh, I never found Cameron Diaz attractive. What's up with that? Why does everybody love her?
Not even in this?
Especially not in this.
Especially
well,
not in this. Maybe The Mask a little bit.
She's way more attractive in The Mask, and I still hate her in that.
Yeah, me too.
Night and day? Night and day.
No. No.
I feel like, okay.
Knight.
Knight.
No. I do agree about The Mask. I think she's attractive in The Mask. I mean, I don't think she's, like, empirically unattractive, but she's just, like, she's got bad hair in this movie.
Yeah.
And it really detracts.
Everyone has bad hair. I wish I noted the costume designer because it would take.
Daryl Raylando does not have bad hair. Holly Hunter's hair is amazing in this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't
sure,
talk
I
about Holly.
That.
Like, seriously.
Yeah, Holly Hunter's really good. Let's just talk about Holly Hunter. Guys.
She is hilarious and scary and just awesome and sexy.
She's always like playing a different weird character. Like, they're all crazy. She's doing like an undercover thing, but each person is insane.
And she does her weird deep south thing.
Yeah.
Seriously, you want to watch Life Less Ordinary, just skip to all the Delroy Lindo, Holly Hunter scenes.
And
they're amazing.
You know, I actually really like Delroy Lindo, too.
They're great
because
together.
He's oddly, like, broken and, like, sad in the movie, which he never plays. So he's always just, like, bummed out because he doesn't think this whole thing is going to work.
Well, and he's, like, the true romantic. He's the one that writes that amazing poem that, over.
Oh, God, that scene is so bad.
You know what's so funny is...
Their part isn't bad, though.
No, their part's good, but everything about it is bad.
I love Holly Hunter so much in this, and I do remember their scenes very specifically, but I remember when Gone in 60 Seconds came out, it was Delroy Lindo and Timothy Oliphant as the detectives, and I thought, if Holly Hunter was in this, she'd be badass.
Delroy Lindo and Timothy Oliphant are still good together.
They are, but imagine Holly Hunter in that role. She'd be badass.
I couldn't see Delroy Lindo chastising Holly Hunter the way that he chastises Timothy Oliphant.
Now switch the roles.
But Timothy Oliphant is also in A Life Less Ordinary.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Holy cow, yeah.
Yeah.
Bring it
so wait,
home.
Can
For like
anyone...
2 seconds.
Excuse me. I don't want to necessarily seriously discuss this, but...
Stanley Tucci's in this, and Tony Shalhoub is also in this.
Tony Shalhoub has my favorite line in the movie. What is it? Oh, yeah, he's talking to Ewan McGregor when Cameron Diaz walks in, says the poem, because Delroy Lindo gives it to them, but Ewan McGregor doesn't write it, and he tells her that, and Tony Shalhoub gives him pep talk.
It's not a pep
talk. She'll be going to a heaven for glorious pussy, and you'll be cleaning the diner in hell. It's just, that's a weird, the whole movie's weird.
Yeah. It's such a weird, awkward, like, all over the place movie. Like, okay, what's his name's character with the friend who's a dog but not a dog?
Oh, what's his name?
Maury Shaken?
Yes, Maury Shaken. That's it. Yeah, with his weird
friend. So, okay, I just want to let everybody who's listening know, I didn't even have to look at IMDb. That was a poll, just out of thin air. But yeah, like, he just shows, like, it's just so, like, it doesn't flow. It doesn't flow all together. The movie doesn't work as a whole.
Yes.
Like, it's firing on one cylinder, and that cylinder is the Delroy Lindo. Two cylinders. Delroy Lindo and Holly Hunter. Those are the two cylinders. And the rest of the engine is just, like, sputtering, whatever it is an engine does when it's not firing on all cylinders.
Yep.
But they're hilarious.
Yep.
So, I love every, like, facial expression Holly Hunter makes.
She's so good.
Seriously,
those are the scenes, like, before I rewatch it, those are the scenes that stand out in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Okay, I think this epitomizes, it just sums up the movie perfectly. Holly Hunter and Delroy Lindo, spoiler alert, as corpses steal an entire scene. And they're not doing, they just slowly fall.
Yes. Yeah.
And they steal the scene. Yeah. That's how good they are compared to everyone else in this movie. And Ian Holm is in the scene with them. And he's like funny, but they're stealing the scene from him.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. The movie is so violent. It's like, okay, so their job is to make people fall in love, and they're ordered by God to do so, which is, I guess, implied. But God is totally cool with all this death.
Yeah.
Like, he's totally fine with people dying. As long
Bank
as,
robberies.
As long as two assholes fall in love, and I guess, like, just leave everyone else to go be by themselves.
Yeah. I don't ever have to watch this movie again. I'm good with it. It's one of those ones where it was on HBO Go, and I'm like, nah, I'm not going to see it again.
Oh, my God. And Gabriel calls God with a phone.
Yeah. A clear, like a phone that I remember like middle schoolers had. It was like a clear phone where you could see all the inner workings of it. I'm like, really?
Like, this is my God phone.
Really, production designer?
What? That's how you talk to God, Gabriel?
I feel like if he was talking to God, he'd have an iPhone before they ever came out.
Or
he'd have like
something.
The iPhone 27.
I think he would have
probably going to be the best one.
A tin can with string.
Yeah.
That would have made more sense to me than the stupid phone.
Or
that
he just
used.
Says, hey, God.
That would have been funnier.
Could you hear everything?
Yeah.
Or he picks up the phone and goes, operator, connect me to God.
Yeah.
All
right. Right away, Mesa.
Do you guys want to move on?
This movie? Yeah, let's move on.
All right.
We're skipping one sort of mentionable thing, which is Alien Love Triangle, which I wish I could have seen because it looks good.
It was supposed to be part of a trilogy.
Yeah. And
that's the only reason that it's interesting to me.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I've written down specifically, which was going to be part of Mimic and Imposter, which I don't know what that is with Gary Sinise.
Oh my gosh, Imposter?
I never saw Imposter.
It's amazingly bad, but amazing at the same time. Yeah. Amazing/bad/amazing again.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio and Gary Sinise and Madeline Stowe.
Yes.
You've never seen this trailer even?
No, I haven't.
Where it's like...
Should we watch it live right now?
It's a crazy movie, but I don't understand how these three movies were tied together. Like, I don't know if they had the same original author or something, but it was a weird... Like, I don't see these three stories being connected to each other. I don't see the link.
Although Mimic would have been better as a short, I think.
Yeah.
30 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on.
Moving on. Moving on is probably... no one is going to agree with me on this. In fact, this is his lowest rated movie out of anybody. Although his third highest grossing.
We know why.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I still really like The Beach. 2000.
2000's The Beach.
The Beach, also written by John Hodge.
Right? I enjoyed it. So now we can tell Jenny all about
Before we get into that, let's do our reviews for the people who don't want to be spoiled.
Our ratings?
Yeah, our ratings. So, our reviews. Letterboxd review.
This is rated R.
One through five. I definitely give this a solid four.
Are we talking about The Beach?
Yeah.
I did 3.5.
Yeah. One.
Brandon.
Hold on, guys. Wow. I need a minute.
Yeah, one star. No, you Adam, move on.
Adam really burned me right
move
there.
Move on.
Four.
Wow. Now, is that because I
with
said
an
one
option,
star?
With an option to raise it to 0.5. No, because I'm fighting with nostalgia and sentimentality.
Okay. Wait, so did you rewatch it or not?
Oh, yeah, I rewatched it.
Okay.
Three.
Kevin with a three. All right, just in the middle.
I told you I went through this whole thing coming to the conclusion that I'm not a Danny Boyle fan. I like.
Oh, why didn't you let us know at all that you're going to not like
two of his
later movies?
Two of his movies.
I wish you could have predicted this.
Did I not mention it?
I didn't
instead of
that.
Talking about
nobody
how good the first two movies were, it's like, oh, I'm so glad these are good. Cause
yeah.
All right.
Every time I see this movie, it goes down.
Yeah, me too, even though I like it.
Okay.
I really liked it when I first saw it. Really, really liked it. And every time I see it, it goes down.
This is his third and I think final collaboration with
Hodge.
The editor, Hirokubo, John Hodge.
It's not his last John Hodge.
Cinematographer, definitely.
The first with Darius Kanji.
Yeah.
And
the first with Alex Garland.
The first with Alex Garland.
This just introduces him to Alex Garland because he wrote the novel.
Because he wrote the book, which is an amazing book. That I read when I was 20, like 1920, that I haven't read since. And like the movie, I think I would look on the book a lot differently. Because this movie is like an ignorant 17-year-old, like in a lot of ways.
In most ways.
I'm so trying to be like positive. I feel like I'm breaking up with someone. Like, these are the reasons why we don't work together anymore. But it was good times. It was great time. I had a lot of fun, right?
At the time? Back in the day?
Yeah, back in the day. Way good times.
Definitely the first half of this movie, I love.
Yes. It moves really quickly up until...
He gets banished.
Up until he gets banished. Yeah. Which is unfortunate because the book kind of lays the groundwork for all that stuff a lot better. And there's a character they excise from the book, Jed, who's...
Yeah.
That was his job. Like, when they go to the outpost for him to look, there was a guy whose job it was to do that. And that's the guy who, like, led them to the camp to begin with. And so he became buddy-buddy with Richard.
Okay.
And so that's how Richard kind of got the whole... And he was already obsessed with Apocalypse Now. Like, that's laid out in the beginning. And all that stuff just comes in out of nowhere in the movie. And
oh, wait, so that stuff really isn't... Weird. That's in the book? It's not just because Danny Boyle's favorite movie is Apocalypse Now?
No.
Okay. That stuff is in the book, yeah. Okay. There's a lot of Vietnam...
That's convenient.
It's not... And it's not specifically Apocalypse Now. It's more Vietnam.
Okay. Well, because you know that's his favorite movie, right?
Apocalypse Now?
Yeah.
I've never seen Apocalypse Now. Is that the part where he goes crazy? Would be the Apocalypse Now part.
Well, they're watching Apocalypse Now. When he it's the very beginning of the movie, when he checks into the hotel and like all the people are downstairs watching the movie, they're watching Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all. That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when he goes in and steals, when he's like,
yeah, it's
lucky
very,
with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in the movie, like him and Daffy's relationship, like it's like the chapter's always open with like some discussion about like Vietnam and like the jungles of Vietnam. And it kind of, and he blends it into the story. So it's just,
does his obsession with Apocalypse Now have to do with why he like goes after the
Oh, I was talking
guys?
About Danny Boyle. I don't know about it in the movie. Or in the book.
In the book.
Well, I mean, in the book, it's more like a Lord of the Flies Apocalypse Now thing where it's a slow... Like Apocalypse Now, the character slowly goes crazy. Mm-hmm. In the book, the same thing. And in the movie, it's just like, oh, he's crazy.
Well, and he gets really close to Jed.
Who
Jed is kind of like Richard in the second half of the movie.
What's the movie also has a little, I mean, it's especially the stuff when he's going crazy and with the bandana, it also kind of reminds me of Deer Hunter.
And the one thing that the book does that I thought was brilliant is him like having these conversations with Daffy.
Yes.
That he realizes that Daffy wanted to like introduce the island to the world. He wanted this island to be populated by the world.
Yeah.
And he used Richard to do that.
He couldn't live there anymore. But he didn't want anyone else to. So he was like a man without a country, like caught between the two worlds. The book is really great. I think I want to find some consensus here. Can we all agree that the soundtrack is killer?
No.
Yes.
No. Maybe. So this is DiCaprio. DiCaprio got out of Titanic and he kind of wanted it. He's like, look, I'm everywhere. I want to cool off. I want people to kind of forget about me. That was his smartest move ever. Like, DiCaprio's career is the way it is because he was very smart from the beginning. He knew that after Titanic, he could do whatever he wanted to. He literally
said... He did two movies before this.
He did one.
Two.
What did he do?
Man in the Iron Mask and Celebrity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Celebrity was just
Celebrity.
A cameo,
yeah.
And it was Woody Allen.
He's, like, one of the best parts of that movie.
He is.
Yeah, but so Woody Allen gets everybody in a Woody Allen movie at some point.
Yeah.
Even for a little bit.
Yeah. And so he did the Man with Iron Mask because Randall Wallace was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could totally see why he did that. And then this was kind of him saying, I'm back with this one. And I like him in it. I like...
He's really good.
He's really good. And...
He's having a problem with this movie.
Tilda Swinton
so
is awesome.
Finally tell Jenny. So the story behind this is that Ewan McGregor was supposed to be the lead in this. And at some point, did he...
He would get more money if he got Leo to do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
With Leo attached, he would get more funding.
They realized it could be a bigger movie.
Ewan McGregor would have been too old for this.
That's the other
They're
thing.
Not that much older.
Yeah.
He's not that much older than Leo.
Yeah,
Leo
but
just
he looks older.
Because Ewan McGregor at the time? No way would have... Yeah. If this is after Lifeless Ordinary, already in Lifeless Ordinary, he looks way older than
that
Leo.
That was the hair.
And Richard's supposed to...
Maybe.
And Richard's supposed
true.
To be pretty young. I think he's great in the movie.
Leo?
Yeah.
Yeah, Leo's,
oh,
Leo's
yeah, I think
great.
So too.
Yeah.
But it's not... I don't have a problem with Leo. I have a problem with Richard
okay,
as a character.
What is your problem? Lay it out.
Well, I have many problems with this
movie.
Wait.
Okay, so then he just got really mad at...
And stopped talking to Danny Boyle.
Yeah,
because
he had promised him the role. He had promised him the role.
Promised him the role. They pretty much said he was cast, and then all of a sudden he hears that Leonardo DiCaprio is cast. They didn't even tell him.
Like out of the blue.
He just hears it, and when he goes to like talk to like people. Danny doesn't really say anything, and then Andrew McDonald, the asshole producer, is like, "Come on, man, just get on board." And that was it. So that's why he didn't want to talk to.
So now
either
they're not talking. They're still not talking.
Well, they weren't, but they.
But Danny did. Apologized. Danny apologized. Now. He felt bad. He didn't think it, the way it was handled was right. That it wasn't handled correctly, and so he felt bad.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But this movie definitely all of the first half I really really enjoyed. Tilda Swinton is great in this.
She's awesome.
Just
and really sexy.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. The movie is beautiful. Yeah, the opening in Thailand, the beach.
Yeah, and
parts of the movie are beautiful
with the voiceover in the beginning, right?
Yeah, voiceover at the beginning, kind of fast paced. Yeah. Bangkok.
He talks about the society and whatnot.
Yeah, this would have been a good movie for movies that make you want to travel. Yeah,
that is exactly, really, that is exactly why I got behind it when I first saw it. And also that soundtrack, guys.
Like, just the rule.
You can't love the soundtrack together.
The rules that he kind of.
I'm there with you.
The rules that he mentioned in the beginning of the movie, like don't overstay your welcome and all that voiceover. Yeah. I really enjoyed. So great work by everybody. And I did. It's funny. There's a sex scene in this, and my thought was like, wow, you could definitely like the way he shot and stuff. You could definitely tell like DiCaprio did not like. He's like, no, like if I do this, it's definitely just that. Looking at his character, you're like, he knows that it's going to fuck up the dynamic once he gets back to the island.
Well, and it's a movie and you shouldn't constantly do this, but in the book, he doesn't sleep with anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
That's smart.
For exactly that reason. Because he's like, man, but I like ATN, and so I don't want to fuck up that relationship.
Yeah.
And he doesn't sleep with Sal either.
Sal?
Because he actually doesn't go back to the island. She doesn't go back to the island.
It's him and Jed.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The character that they cut out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So, like, oh, we cut out this guy. He's got to go with someone. Well, how about someone he can have sex with? All right, it's Leo. Yeah.
And the whole movie is, as a whole, at the end, it kind of falls apart. But the beginning is so solid, and I love DiCaprio so much in this that I definitely had to give it 4 stars. But
wait, if he didn't go back to the, in the book, if he didn't go back with her, then how did everyone find out that he told those people?
Jed, right?
It's been so long.
And is that why everyone hated him? I mean, like,
so Jed, I believe, sees that they're that the group is on the island. So I think they run into them in Thailand, and because Sal doesn't find out about
that scene is the same. Jed finds out about it.
I think everybody finds out when the farmers actually drag the dead bodies to the camp.
Yes, that's right.
And they have a map.
Yeah,
the way it's handled in the book is completely different.
I highly recommend people read the book.
Kevin just spoiled it. I can't read it now.
So he doesn't go crazy in the woods then because he wasn't looking for them. Or he still is looking for them and he just doesn't find them.
Yes, because that still happens.
Yeah.
When they get shot, that still happens. But I think Jed makes him take over his job.
Yes.
Because that's Jed's job the entire time is to be the lookout. And so he's already like going crazy. So I think Richard takes over his job.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm remembering that right, I might not be remembering
that
right.
I think that's about right, yeah.
Okay. It's been a long time.
But yeah, anybody else have any complaints and anything? I think we've
talked about it. I don't want to spend the whole episode talking about why I don't like it.
So your lowest rated movie of Danny Boyle's or no?
No.
There's more?
No, has he?
I told you, I only like 2 of his movies.
All right. So.
It is,
I told you.
It is. I didn't.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I didn't want to.
I'm sorry. I only love 2 of his movies.
Okay.
Like, I didn't want to do this throughout the thing, but it has a 19% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
But it's his third. But it's his third highest grossing movie because of Leonardo DiCaprio and Titanic. It just happened.
Yeah. All right. Next, we'll talk about
That video game shit looks terrible.
Oh, yeah. I hated that so much. Yeah.
Like, not just, like, looks terrible, but, like, oh, because it's, like, data graphics, but it's just, like, what? Stop. Just don't do that. Don't, no.
Yeah, that was really weird.
It was really off-putting.
It's just because the whole thing comes out of nowhere. He goes crazy so fast.
Yeah.
Like, out of
like
nowhere.
Like, there's no time.
And I don't get the... I mean, if he was sitting on the island playing Game Boy the entire time, okay, yeah, so he turns his life into a video game, get it. But he's not sitting... He's not the character
there's
that's sitting
one
there playing,
scene playing he's, where he's playing a video
exactly.
game.
Exactly.
And, again, coming back to the not necessarily likable character. I mean, I don't know how he is in the book, but in the movie, he comes off as, like, the douchey... Like, if this was an Eli Roth movie, he'd be the one being tortured in the chamber.
He'd be Eli Roth.
No. Eli Roth wasn't in his own movies.
No, I know. But Eli Roth is kind of a... He seems like...
I like Eli Roth.
I do too. I don't care. I mean, I don't care either way, but
he'd be one of the guys in the hostel getting his fucking Achilles tendon cut in half.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we're going to be talking about. We'll lump these in together because I haven't seen them, so I just assume.
Yeah, Who's Us Strumpet? The 2001 movie about a poet played by Christopher Eccleston.
I think you're the only one.
I didn't see it.
Then nobody.
No. Nope. So,
yeah, and this was a TV movie made for the BBC, right?
Was mm-hmm.
it? And then the 2001. Other one. Yeah, the other one was Vacuuming Completely Nude in Paradise. Yep. Again, for a TV movie for the BBC.
I did watch this movie.
You watched the whole thing?
Jenny? I watched it all the way through.
Okay.
Ratings first?
Half a star.
Jenny?
One.
Oh, wow, generous.
Did you not know you could give it half a star?
I didn't know I could give it half a star. Yeah.
You can give it half a star. That's what I figured. So, can you give it half? You want to give it half?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Because it's really painful. It's so bad. It's like, okay, it's Glengarry Glen Ross on Glen Ross on crack and just annoying as fuck. Like, it's the epitome of... It's like a shitty made-for-TV parody of a Danny Boyle movie. It's really painful. It's just constant. It's like the whole movie is the opening of Trainspotting, where it's like the constant fast motion, blah, 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 with the like talking over everything, like just nonstop. And it's not good at all. I hated it so much. Like I told you before, like at one point I was like, all right, I'm going to read the newspaper while this is on. Because it was just, I was like, I needed to stop.
Yeah, I fell asleep. And then I made myself get up and start doing something while like, it was on in the background.
Nobody's likable. Nobody's likable. Nope. There's no like you're not rooting for, and it's just kind of it's indecipherable. It's just like this blur. It's
I didn't care about it. I was I don't give a shit.
At the same time,
vacuums.
You know exactly what's gonna happen. Like I see exactly where this is going. Skip it. Yeah.
Okay, so we can say, though, that the only good thing to come out of these two movies, and maybe Adam is the only person who doesn't agree with this, is his love affair with John Murphy, his composer.
Yeah.
Because John Murphy does some pretty amazing scores.
He did the music for this?
Is this where you met him?
He started with Strumpet, and then he did Vacuuming Nude, and then he does the next several movies. Okay. Yeah, all but right. Strumpet was his first time working with John Murphy as a composer.
I don't know about that, but so he.
So I mean, I don't know if the scores are good.
He's good at
I'm just saying,
abrasive house music that's crushing your soul.
I'm just saying there might be nothing good score wise, but this is where he started working with John Murphy.
You know that Dane
later
Cook
works.
Joke where he talks about walking into the woofer? That's what Vacuuming Naked in Paradise is like. It's walking into the subwoofer and you're stuck there for an hour.
I would enjoy this. That's the only. I feel like that's the only Dane Cook joke I remember until I have it. I could enjoy this if it was just a little bit lower.
So he's also liking wanting acidy spit too.
Let's move on. Nobody likes these two, so
let's use on. John Murphy as a bridge to move into
2002's 28 Days.
Later. Moving to probably the only other movie that Adam actually loves.
Yeah. All right, so this again.
I have problems with the movie.
That's okay.
This again.
I don't.
This one's written by Alex Garland, and I think he got a new cinematographer for this one, right?
Yeah, this is when he starts using his digital.
Anthony Dodd Mantle.
Yep.
And we'll save it for
Chris Gill, editor.
No, I was gonna. It was an opinion outside of the review. Okay.
So my review of this is definitely 5 stars.
Five.
4.5.
5.
Okay. All right. So let's get into spoilers. Let's get into talking about it.
All right. Let's get into it. Let's talk about the digital.
Okay. So the shot on the, one of the very first digital cameras that shot 20, it shot 24 frames per second, I believe.
The XL1 it did not.
Did not.
Did not.
XL2 did. So XL1, Canon XL1, with the adapter, and he put film lenses on it. Mm-hmm. But we had this camera, and it was really, the limitations of this camera are amazing.
You can tell.
Yeah, and it's a little better. It gives you a little bit more depth of field once you start adding film lenses to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, you're struggling. Like
It's mini DV.
Yeah.
It's not even HDV. Yeah. It's mini DV.
Yeah.
And I don't think it necessarily takes anything away from the movie.
No.
Because they had to fashion the movie to the format.
Yeah.
Right.
Like they had to go into it knowing exactly what they could and could not do.
Yeah, it works.
But you know what? It works for the movie. Yeah. And I like here's what I like about people who use digital and stuff like that is how they experiment with it. Like I like the fact that Scorsese experimenting with it and doing something different. I love Danny Boyle's use of it here. just because it gives you. And also, I think one of the main reasons they used it was because they were going to be shooting a lot of scenes in London, where the streets were going to be empty, mm-hmm. and they couldn't afford the time that it would take to load the magazines.
Right.
So shooting with a bunch of digital cameras, it just
like, you know, every shot you see of an empty London is there is chaos just outside of the frame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't mind the digital part of it.
The only part where I thought it was a really bad choice of what they, just because it took me out of it visually, was there's a shot where they're driving the car and the car is at the top of the frame and it's like that.
Where it looks like they're driving through an impressionist painting.
Yes.
The flower fields.
Yeah, yeah, and the flower fields.
And that's Daniel Boyle just like, well, film's not perfect, so.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. So, like, no, he says that on the commentary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, that was the one thing I didn't
like. There's no other explanation. It's like, no, it looks like you're driving through a Van Gogh painting, and just because, no rhyme or reason, just because.
I know, that's because if it just kept with, because it's gritty without trying to be gritty. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing they did to make it gritty. It's just the film sucked that they were using.
And this was, I love this movie not because I like, not only because I love the material, but also because it introduced us to Cillian Murphy.
Yep.
And Naomi Harris.
Yep. Yep.
And I think, no, we knew about Chris Gleason.
And Chris Ragleson.
And Betty Kirse.
Yeah.
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 Yes. Sure.
Why not?
But yeah. That's right, Brandon Gleason.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
What?
I said Betty Kirse.
I know. Mm-hmm. You said Brandon Gleason a second ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody else know who Betty Kirse is?
Nope.
No.
The girl.
I kind of figured that's
who. Yeah. She only did two movies?
She did, yeah. Well, she's like a...
There's
she's
only
like
one
a,
other girl in the movie.
She's a goth pop star.
Oh, wow.
What?
Now, yeah. In London.
And really?
Yeah, oh. that's her name, her goth name, Betty Kirse. Mm. I think that's what it is, something like that.
But, so, the synopsis is, this guy wakes up, he was a bike messenger, he was in an accident, he wakes up, and it's funny, watching this, I'm like, oh, wow, like, The Walking Dead kind of
yeah
they did a yes
ripped
and
it off. It's okay.
Well, they ripped it off, but it was a yes and like, oh, we'll do it, but then we're really gonna
wait
scare you.
The Walking Dead ripped off this.
Yeah,
this is a common zombie tenet. Like,
yeah, yeah,
it's happened in multiple zombie movies
where the guy wakes
before
up?
And after Walking Dead
where he yeah. wakes up.
Yeah,
in a hospital bed.
Yes,
what, it happened. Where?
It happened in Resident Evil. It happened in this. It's happened in, like, there's Italian giallo movies.
Wasn't it Resident Evil after this?
I don't remember. It doesn't. I mean, it's a common thing.
Resident Evil was before this, I think.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm really behind sticking this to The Walking Dead. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I love that intro. And it just kind of kicks off like a really cool mystery. Like, oh, what's up with all these people? And it's a different twist on the zombie genre. I guess, Adam, you know this best. Is this the first movie that make quote-unquote zombies fast zombies?
Well, they're not zombies, so no.
Per se.
They're infected.
Yeah, they're not zombies.
But it's his, it was they're his not take. Zombies. It was his take
here we
on,
go,
on zombies.
They're not zombies.
All right.
Because they're not called zombies or because they're not zombies?
Because they're not zombies. I don't know what else to tell you. Because
they're not dead. Because they're not the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, they're not dead.
It's
they're
true.
Infected.
They're infected with the disease and they started acting.
That's true. Weird. All right, I'll give you that.
Zombies are undead. They're somnambulants. They come back to life.
So wait, does that mean? Oh, okay, okay.
These
oh,
are not
somnambulants.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
They're not yeah, zombies. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I don't know what else to tell you.
But everyone, all the zombie movies that came later, kind of made their zombies fast. That's what I hate about
right.
zombies now.
Yeah.
That they're fast.
Too fast.
They can run if they want to.
Yeah, I don't like that. All right. So Jenny, do you like this movie? This is the one you love, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does yeah, it scare you?
It's one of my favorite horror movies. Of all time.
Now, we all saw the different endings, the alternate endings.
Okay, hold on. I have to admit this. I didn't realize there was a third alternate ending until today.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the third one?
I remember when I got
the... He didn't know either.
I didn't know either.
When I got the DVD, that the day that we got it, we all sat, we watched the movie, we watched the alternate that they recorded, and then we actually went and sat through them reading the script
yeah.
and showing the storyboards.
I didn't know that. Like, yeah. I didn't see the arrow at the bottom of the screen until today. I was like, oh, because I've always had a small TV. So I never noticed the arrow at the bottom of the screen. I'm like, oh, shit, there's another screen.
Okay, so wait, the first ending is the one in the movie. It's yeah. happy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about
right
it.
Out on the thing.
Okay,
everyone
so
knows
the
that
theatrical
one.
Release
so
is the happy
release.
Ending.
So which is, at the end, Cillian Murphy's character, what's his name again?
Jim.
Jim, he gets shot. all three of them walk out and get in the car and take off. And the next scene, it cuts to...
Well, and it looks like the car crashes.
Yes,
they break through the gate. And it just cuts right there. To the hospital bed.
Opening up hospital bed. And he wakes up again.
Like the beginning, yeah.
20 days later again. And he wakes up and he's all healed up. He's bandaged
up. Well, there's a flash of her working on
him. Yeah, you see him working.
Yeah.
There's like a flash of them in an actual hospital.
So she took the bullet out, I suppose, and, you know, patched him up. And he wakes up. He goes to meet her, and they are now in this little cottage in the middle of nowhere in the country. And she's sewing like all this fabric together. And then the young girl, what's her name?
Hannah.
Hannah comes over, and they're like, she's like, I hear it. They all run out with the big old fabric stuff, and they spread it out, and they spell out hello with all this fabric, right? Hello.
Yeah, I know you're right.
Yeah. And
okay, because then you see Jeff. You know it's hello because one of my favorite parts of this ending is the fact that when he's like in the middle of his crazy days, it flashes hell. And like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
And the fighter jet that flies by tips its wing, it sees them, and then do you hear the chatter right from the airplane that says send the chopper or something like that? Mm-hmm. And it's a happy ending. That's how it ends. Then the alternate ending is.
So okay. So it's basically the same thing, except they cut to the hospital and he's being worked on by Naomi and Hannah, and he dies.
Yeah,
but you has the awesome line where Hannah's like, "So what do we do?" And she's like, "We keep moving." And then that just awesome shot with the elevator doors closing on.
Yeah, the and they grab the guns.
Yeah, I like that ending.
Yeah,
so good.
And I might say that it's one of my favorites. It's better than the theatrical for me. Like just because, you don't have... It's like... I don't know. It really kind of sets... Like, it sets the sequel up. She could have had her own movie. Where they're really just like... And also, just it's a grim... Like, it's a grim situation. It should be a grim ending for me.
Well, I think it sets... It really... In a way, sets up that world and acknowledges that world to what it is. I mean, it's not a happy that world. Yeah. You're not going to have happy endings in that world.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be tough, and you're just going to have to say, well, "We lost somebody. Let's move on. We can't take any time to just like mourn that person and worry about them. We have to keep fucking moving on."
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I'm one of the few people. I loved the movie from the first time I saw it with the ending that it had. I didn't need any other ending.
Damn you!
I think the ending in the theatrical ending works because of that flash to the hell thing.
Yeah. Because well, you remember flash to the hell, and then you get 28 days later again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which...
But it's weird because, like, watching the other two endings, it's like, all right, well, you see where they can just add, like, one shot. It's like, oh, hey, there's them doing this. And, oh, hey, there's Cillian Murphy over there. They just had to shoot that one section of the scene to make it work.
Yeah. And then there's another ending, though.
Where it's just the two of them.
They just, they never were able to shoot it. They just storyboarded it. And
oh, wait, well, before we get to that one. So there's the ending that he was just talking about the hospital.
Yeah.
And then there's the second ending where it's just Hannah and Selena.
In the cottage.
In the cottage, making the sign.
Oh, that's
and then there's the unfilmed one. Yeah.
So there's really...
Which is a whole other direction, which I would kind of like to see.
Yeah. So explain
but also
that
doesn't
one.
Make any sense.
Yeah, explain that one.
Right. Okay, so in the third ending, the unfilmed ending... Which is actually a whole other third act, completely different from the movie, that starts, if you haven't seen the movie, you probably should have stopped listening a while ago. So it starts when they get to the blockade. Wait, so you haven't seen the third ending?
No.
So when they get to the blockade and the soldiers show up, they don't show up. Soldiers don't show up. Frank gets infected, and somehow Jim ties him up. And then they end up finding the facility from the beginning of the movie. With the monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out there's like a secret. We're kind of okay. So this is where it gets like, did Kirkman see this alternate ending? He had this DVD and he watched it and I didn't. Or no, the writers from the series, because it's not in the movie or not in the show, the comic. Sorry. So they show up at the facility and there's some guy locked in the facility who's like, I'm not going to let you in. Don't tell me your name. I don't care who you are. I'm not opening this door. And because they wanted to do it without introducing any, they didn't want to introduce a bunch of new characters. They wanted to keep it a small cast. And so it's Jim trying to get this guy to open the door.
Because he's got the secret in
there. Because he's got the secret to the cure. Yeah. And so they have Frank tied up. So, like, we want the cure. We just want to save him. And, like, after time goes by, finally the guy's like, all right, the cure is a blood transfusion. like you have to give him a full transfusion. And the problem is Jim is the only one who has the same blood type as him. So he's like, all right, well, you can save him, but you have to sacrifice your own life. And then so Jim ends up doing that. And then Frank is cured, and the guy lets Frank and Selena and Hannah in the room, and they close it off. And then it goes to Jim back in the hospital bed, and now he's infected.
I like that ending 1,000 times better.
It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so the problem with that ending is, if your blood, if a single drop of blood infects you, this is what Danny Boyle actually says.
Oh,
if a single drop of blood infects you, how can they clean out your entire body to transfuse the blood? Because all it takes is one drop of blood.
Yeah, well, I mean, the dumb logic is that, well, you're removing all the blood and putting in new blood, but that's not how the human body works.
Yeah, you have to, like, clean out all I think he literally says, would you clean out all the capillaries? Something like that.
I responded to that ending because my only problem with the movie, honestly, is when they get to the blockade with the soldiers, and it's 28 days later.
Mm-hmm.
28 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they are way more crazy than I think should be for a group of soldiers 28 days after a thing.
Okay.
It's a month.
Well, it's a
and
month.
They're already into the raping women to save humanity thing.
Oh, no, but okay, the opening of the movie is him alone in London. There's nobody else around.
No, I get it. So, I get it. I just feel like, well, especially when there's...
Okay, how long was the trip like across the sea back in the day? Like from the old world to the new world, how long is that trip?
A year or months, months to a year.
All right, but it's months.
Yeah,
it's not a crazy amount of time, and people go crazy before they even made it halfway. So if you can go stir crazy on a ship when you know people are still alive, and there are other people around you who are still alive.
I mean, and you don't know how long it'd been since they personally had seen women as being a soldier.
Also, they really...
To be honest.
I'm sorry. Are you defending
me? She's defending Ray.
I'm just saying.
Listen, it's been
saying.
A long time since they've seen any tale.
It's been longer than 30 minutes. Brent, 30 days.
Also, you don't know how long it took them to get from the city to this place.
Well, okay. Okay, yeah, but
you're adding more days.
It's only been... It takes them 2 days. They say that in the commentary. It takes them 2 days to get there.
Well, and I think the one thing...
So then
it's
exactly a month.
You really have... March.
But still, zombie apocalypse... That makes people crazy.
Yeah.
Even though they're not zombies.
Yeah. The one thing you really have to factor in, these are soldiers. If you read the book Jarhead, you really read you hear the programming that people go through to get up to a point to kill people. So they're already crazy.
I support our troops.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
The dehumanization.
And especially,
the soldiers are already kind of crazy.
The higher you move up, the crazier you're going to get because you have to do crazier shit to people.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're already fucked in the head. I support the troops.
But
the way that they're trained.
He's talking about the British soldiers. He's not talking about Americans.
No. Yeah. Oh, Americans aren't trained like that.
okay.
Really well.
I see all that, but I'm just going to call. I'm not going to raise. I'm not going to fold, but I get it. But it's still, it's too short, especially for a group of soldiers, unless your view is a highly cynical view of soldiers, of the British Army.
No. Here's the thing. Here's my logic is that once... infrastructure falls, there are no rules.
Wait, well, hold on, time out. I want to even go further back. Okay. Casualties of war. The world hasn't even ended.
No, yeah.
And they're raping someone.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
They were raping people in the war already, and the world hasn't ended. That happened. There was rape and pillage in the war, and the world didn't end.
And that was based on a true story.
Yeah. That is a true... I'm not even talking about based on a true story. Like, in the war, that happened. The rape and pillage of Vietnamese people in the Vietnam War. The world hadn't ended at all. That's just what happened.
Right. And I understand, like, statistically, there's many people being raped, like, right now.
Exactly.
No.
Okay. Okay.
Now. Ricardo is raping me
I don't
right
wanna
now.
American soldiers rape other American soldiers.
Right.
Without the end of the world.
Well, and it's not even soldiers. People rape people. I get it.
So why does 28 days later matter?
Yeah.
We just said rape like...
Letterboxd. It's not going to be happy about it.
I'm not going to be happy about it at all. So why did... Yeah, I don't... The 28 days... I don't see that as... Like, I'm... People...
Just like 28 days later, jeez, Brandon.
No, I don't even care about him liking 28 days later. It's just the inability...
You wouldn't even meet me on the beach soundtrack.
Hey, wait, I did.
Yes, Kevin did.
Kevin did.
He's also the only one understanding about my objection 28 days later.
Look, but, we would eat you.
No. And I'm
forget the raping. I agree.
and I agree that like humanity on a person level is three meals away from barbarism.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you miss three meals.
I'm like a snack away,
and you're ready. Yeah, and you're just ready to kill a motherfucker. Like that cheese sandwich.
Three meals. You're a shopping deal away. I'm just undercutting everything you say. You're a Black Friday away from trampling a stranger because you want a DVD player that's $10.
Yeah. All right. Hey, and you know what just happened? Hold on. No. Hold on. I'm going to turn this around. You don't have to be so negative now.
No, I'm just a realist.
No. I don't mean that. I'm saying you guys are turning me around on this.
Yes. Okay.
They're also very hot women.
Yeah.
I mean, if it had been like a fat chick.
Jenny, I did not expect or want this from you. Listen, they're hot.
Then they probably would have been like,
just don't say they were asking for it.
We've got a couple more weeks. We can wait.
Yeah, like, you know, we're getting the comps together and stuff.
Yeah, we got this guy. Just let him go.
We're building a radio tower.
So like Tim, they're like, Tim, you want to take a shower together? They're doing each other before. Like, really good. We're good.
Karen, you know, her name's probably Karen.
I just would hope that a group of soldiers would be more determined.
Gilly.
Gilly, yeah. Gilly.
Would be more determined to try and find a solution or try to communicate with someone abroad something.
That's not what soldiers are for. I think that's just a basic misunderstanding of what soldiers are for.
Yeah.
Well,
especially these
for raping, right?
Well, here.
That's offensive.
That's not what they're for. What are they doing that they are for?
Okay. They are to fight.
No, wait.
Soldiers don't find answers.
He does pick out a nice dress. Maybe that's what soldiers are for.
Here we go.
To make bad eggs.
We should move it along.
Yeah, we should. I'm sorry.
But here we go. It's this simple. Their objective. It's kind of like in the Bourne movie. Like they were giving objectives before to do, and now there's no more objectives.
Right.
So the objective is to survive and like what he says, like
procreate,
and procreate. Mm-hmm. Like what if we are the only people left? We have to.
Okay, hey, you guys have turned me around.
Done. Moving along.
What to else? The happy place.
Hey, you know what? 5 stars.
Yes. Yes.
Letterboxd.com, forget the
Ethiopian. Wow.
All right. So is there anything else you guys want to talk about this movie?
No, let's move on.
Let's just move on.
Killian Murphy is badass, right?
Killian Murphy is badass.
Oh, and Naomi Harris.
Oh, she's so badass. All around.
Who you may remember as a Moneypenny in Skyfall. Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yep. Yeah.
I would say getting
still
hotter
seen that one.
As older she gets.
Yes. She's a fine one.
Also,
she
in really a future is. Danny Boyle thing, we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But right now, we're going to talk about 2004's Millions.
Wait, did we play a clip from this one?
No, I don't have any clips from 28 Days.
Let's move it on with the clips.
Let's act it out.
Fuck clips.
Oh, yes.
We'll get the script and act it out.
Hello?
Don't.
All right.
2004's weird screwball Christian comedy, Millions.
Okay, rating. Ricardo goes with half.
What?
Yeah. Ooh, that is low.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Don't care for this movie.
Even I didn't give it that low of a rating.
Saw it once, never need to see it again.
Wait, you didn't even rewatch it?
Oh, man.
Didn't rewatch it.
Okay, well, I think that's your first problem right there. Okay.
Jenny?
3.5.
Adam? I gave it a 3.5 also.
This is my first time seeing it. I'd give it a 3.
All very generous, guys.
Yeah, if I had kids and believed in God, it might be higher.
I'd probably give it a 3.
I like your logic. But
you had kids and believed in God?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Also my first time seeing it, by the way.
Yeah.
I watched it when it came out.
The term I think is virgin in this movie.
Virgin, yes. Like Mary.
Yeah, I don't know. So, okay, yeah.
So it's about two kids, Damien and his brother, move into this cookie-cutter suburb of Liverpool.
I'm more upset about the fact that Ricardo didn't even rewatch this. When I rewatched Sunshine, and I already knew that I hated that movie. I gave it a second chance.
Here's the thing: is that I have to watch a bunch of movies for the other canon film episode we're doing. So I just ran out of time. Sorry, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "What do you want to rewatch a good movie? 20 Days Later, or do you want to rewatch a movie you didn't like?"
Did you rewatch 127 Hours?
I should have, because I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get it. Hold on. Let's go through. Let's go through Millions. Let's go through Millions. Comedy about kids, Liverpool, cookie cutter, said all those things. Bag of money falls off of a train, thrown off of a train, lands on his fort, and they find it.
This awesome fort, by the way.
Yeah, it is an awesome fort.
It's awesome.
It is an awesome fort. And I actually like some of the camera work, like inside the fort. Like there's this awesome pullback from him, like going up.
There's
like,
a lot of great camera work in this movie.
Yeah, this movie does have a lot of good camera work. He's back to using his obsession in a good way, I think.
It's visually very interesting.
Yeah.
I think the kid is really good. Although the character... Okay, so this kid is good. The character I want to punch in the face sometimes.
The kid is, like, autistically obsessed with saints and that's the stories
not
even, of saints.
See, that's not what annoys me about the character.
I know.
Like, I think the saints are hilarious.
Yes.
Regardless, the saints are really good.
Like, not being Catholic and not being a devout Christian or anything, I think all the stuff with the saints are one of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, it's like any movie where a guy's doing a thing and he sees and talks to people.
It's magical realism.
Yeah, it's magical realism. It works really well for the kid in the movie. And the kid is super sweet.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Oh, he's adorable.
He's really convincing.
I don't have the actor's name in front of me. Ricardo, looks like you're looking at something.
Alex Edel?
Yeah.
But at the same time, half the time I do side with his brother. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Dude. That's just dumb. Like, it's basically it's making like, all right, well, you just have bad parents who didn't teach you about not talking to strangers.
Yeah.
And especially creepy strangers walking alone by the train tracks.
Yeah.
And no big, like, names in this movie.
No, James Nesbitt. James Nesbitt's a big name.
He was also, because this was...
Who plays the father.
This was after Waking Dead and Vine and after Bloody Sunday.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I know he's talking about.
He's awesome.
And before Jekyll.
Yeah. So you guys kind of like this movie. I did.
It was a nice little. I mean, for being this is probably the most, and I don't say like the most Christian movie I've ever really enjoyed. Like, I feel like this is exactly the kind of thing that should be made to promote. Like, not Fireproof. I don't know if anyone sat through Fireproof. I was on a flight and I watched that.
I'm sorry,
horrible piece of garbage. But
not
this,
Left Behind.
But this has actually good, like, moral lessons laid in it.
I'll agree. 100%
yeah, in with you. Like in an entertaining package that is also like serious, but in an entertaining way. Like the crime, the criminal aspect of it is really good.
Another way to look at the movie is the kid is just scarred because his mom died young, and so he sees saints because he's crazy.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Which also makes it better.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
the saints are like Mary or Saint Catherine or whatever, who's like smoking a joint.
Yes. Yeah.
She's my favorite.
She hangs out in the fort. Yeah.
Yeah. She's awesome.
And so
I love Saint Nick.
He's obsessed with the saints. And so he wants to give the money to poor people. Like that's his big thing. And so through that is how they get discovered of having the money. And then the criminals go after him.
And this is a script written by Frank Boyce.
Yes.
Boyce. No.
B-O-Y.
You sure?
Yeah.
C-E. Boyce.
And if you have seen the writer of 24-Hour Party People, which you love, Brandon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love too. So it's I think you only work with him once, I think, for this one.
He actually works more with Michael Winterbottom.
Oh, yes. You're right.
Did he do Tristram Shandy?
I think he did Tristram Shandy, okay. And I think he did The Claim as well.
Okay. He did The Claim.
So for everybody else who rewatched this, though, the opening of this movie, it feels like a Tim Burton movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's like it's super colorful.
Well, like, and like the crazy effects that they're doing, like building the house, and then the music.
Yeah, yeah.
The music particularly. Yes.
It feels somewhat like Big Fish.
I thought it was Danny Boyle, or not Danny Boyle. It is Danny Boyle. I thought it was Danny Elfman. Like, wait.
The, like, stop motion.
Yeah.
Fort
when
building.
Like, building the house.
Or the house, yeah.
That sound happens.
All right. Yeah. But, so, anything complaints in this movie?
It kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
It is, okay, so... There's something intrinsically frustrating about a kid who's just like, because he's very one note. Like, he sees saints and he just wants to give money to the poor. And, like, he's not discriminating about it at all. So sometimes he just gets frustrating. He's like, dude. Like, I could see it, especially since it's a Danny Boyle movie, I could see it getting much darker.
That's what I wanted.
Someone's
going
to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, except, like, someone's going to find you in a shed somewhere dead. Because it's like, just stop. Stop. Like, that guy's clearly not good. Don't talk to him.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess I see where, like, on a level, it's like, all right, well, it's engaging you because it's making you feel something about the character. But at the same time, I don't want to be frustrated with the character 60% of the time.
Well, it's a kiddie shallow grave.
It is a kiddie shallow grave.
Yeah. All right.
He is really good.
The kid is really good.
Yeah.
We've got a lot more movies to talk about. You guys want to move on?
Yeah, let's move on to Sunshine.
All right, so 2007.
Wait, before this, because there's a rumor, because, I mean, he was the second unit director, or the first unit director on 28 Weeks Later, and the rumor is he actually shot, like, the opening of 28 Weeks Later.
Wait, he was?
Yeah. If you look, he was, like, the second or first unit director on 28 Weeks Later.
So, in between this...
Because I heard on the treatment, he's talking about how there was something he wanted to shoot, but he didn't shoot. He was talking about how he wanted to shoot the scene, the Robert Carlyle scenes, when they're, like, isolated from the world. But it didn't sound like he had actually worked on the movie.
On IMDb, under second unit director, it says unaccredited 28 Weeks Later.
You know anybody can add credits to IMDb.
I'm just saying, that's what it said. He hasn't changed it. No one who... His agent hasn't changed it.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't check his IMDb.
He doesn't seem like someone who would check his IMDb.
He's like, what's my ranking on IMDb?
Based on the treatment interview that I just listened to earlier today, it didn't sound like he had anything to do with 28 Weeks Later.
Besides being a producer?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that would have happened in between Millions and Sunshine, correct?
Yes.
All right, so Sunshine from 2007... written by, again,
Alex Garland.
Cinematography by new guy
Alwyn Kukler.
Yeah, and
well, that's because for this one he actually used film.
Yes, went back to film, which I really enjoyed the cinematography and the look of this movie.
The look is unreal.
Yeah. Again, I love. Okay, so ratings real quick, and then we'll get into spoilers. I rated this movie a 3.5. Jenny.
I did too.
Yeah.
Yep. 3.5.
Adam?
I gave it 1.
Brandon?
3.5 is good.
Yeah.
4.5.
4.5?
I kept going back and forth between 3.5 and 4. It depends. Yeah.
There's so little that I don't like about it.
Yeah, it's true.
What you said, but the opposite. Strike that, reverse it. That's how I felt about this movie. From the first time. Like, I was.
I wish you had warned us about that.
I know. I'm sorry.
I just don't like the ending.
No
as
one
much.
Does. Yeah. I mean, everyone doesn't like about it is the ending.
So again, I'm jumping in the bandwagon. The ending, this movie could have been a 5, like a solid 5.
Well, so every time he's asked, he says his influences were the same 3 things: 2001, Solaris, and Alien. And they go in exactly that order in the movie.
Yep.
And the Alien part is the part no one likes.
That's not Alien, that's Event Horizon.
It is
okay, but you know what I mean. Well, you know what he means.
I know the monster
on the ship.
Right, but that's not what he did. He didn't do Alien. He did Event Horizon badly.
Yeah.
I agree that it could have been a 5 if it weren't for the ending. That's how much I hate the ending of this movie. It negates everything else. It takes it from being a 5, not to like a 4 or 3, all the way down to a 1. That's how much the ending sucks to me.
All right. I mean, I definitely agree, but the beginning was so good for me and the acting by everybody was kind of kick-ass.
Yeah, Chris Evans is awesome.
All right, so give a synopsis.
A team of scientists, for reasons unexplained, are trying their second shot at restarting the sun in the year 2057, which is also a thing that's weird about the movie. I don't know why they have to restart the sun in 2057, but in the end, it doesn't necessarily matter. That's what they're doing. And it's a small crew, it's super claustrophobic, and things start going wrong. People start going a little crazy. They run into the original ship, the Icarus One, and they try to dock with that. That goes badly. It's just a progression of... It's really a series of unfortunate events.
Yes.
Yeah. Seriously.
Danny Boyle's series of unfortunate events.
Yes.
But yeah, everyone in is really good. His sense of like claustrophobia, and he talked about that, not wanting to show too many shots of the exterior of the ship, like as many as he could get away with, so it all feels really enclosed, never cutting back to Earth, just always being on the ship with these people. No one's in any makeup, which is so small, but I think really profound that no one's in any makeup or incredibly limited makeup where any other movie they would be in makeup for no reason.
Yeah.
And
I love... Okay, I was really excited about this movie. Like, I really wanted to love this movie. I thought the fact that he made the cast live together before they started filming was awesome. Like, and they do. They all work really well together.
The score...
The score is amazing. I remember I was pissed.
John CD
wasn't out. Yeah, it was like some legal issue where they couldn't release a score for the longest time. I don't even know if it's out yet. But I remember I was like, that's awesome.
I think you can only get it overseas. You can't even get it in the U.S.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, so this is something I wanted to talk about before. But, like, Danny Boyle, to me, he's kind of like, there's a mania to his films where they're kind of like discordant, atonal music. Whereas in Trainspotting, it works where they, like, his weird quirkiness kind of melts together and it's symphonic and there's harmony there, where it's not atonal anymore. Whereas in Sunshine, it's more harmonic. It's not like he doesn't have the house music pumping at you. Like it just flows, and there's an ebb and a flow and a rise and a fall to the film up until they get to the other ship. And then it's not even like the tone necessarily. It's just
the sound design also.
Right.
Like just folds a big part of it. Right into the score. Yeah. Like it all just bleeds into one another.
It melds in together and like it becomes one. But then it doesn't become incongruous until it just plot wise takes a weird left turn and it's like, what the fuck just happened?
Mm-hmm.
With the bridesmaid Mark Strong.
Yeah. I love the diversity in the group. Like just where the characters and the actors come from. Like, you have Cillian Murphy, again, second time working with Danny Boyle. Michelle
Yeoh.
Troy Garrity, who I love, and she'd be in more stuff. He's in Bandits, killed it in Bandits. Rose Byrne.
Rose Byrne, super underrated Rose Byrne.
Yeah. Mm. And I can't pronounce his name.
Kaneda.
Hiroyuki Sanada.
Yeah. Kaneda. Who's in The Last Samurai, and he's amazing in that.
Lost.
Chris Evans, yes. Benedict Wong, and a guy who is like really underrated, and I love him in everything he does. He could play any nationality, really. Cliff Curtis.
Yep.
Yeah, he is like the high point.
Yeah.
Of his character, and just like what he does in the movie is just awesome. Yeah. And, like, his obsession with the light.
Yeah, and I love watching this movie and then watching like Train Day. Because just like the acting, like, okay, I don't know if I talked about it in this podcast, but I love Denzel Washington. Like, I don't watch a part that he does where I see like the acting, you know, every time, even the movie's bad, there's no, all the work he does and all the preparation, all the stuff is like seamless. Like there's no point in the movie, no matter who he's acting against, where you're like, oh, you can see the acting. Like every take, he's like 100%. He's like, just so fucking truthful. And the scenes with Cliff Curtis in Training Day, just like, he's scary. Like, I don't ever want to meet this guy in real life. This guy is fucking scary. And in this movie, he's amazing. Again, given a great performance.
I love, there's a shot where he's like picking skin off his face. I love it so
that
much.
Like slow, like when he slowly starts getting more burned because he's been in the room longer and longer. Yeah.
Love it.
But I can say, so since I'm the person who gave it the highest score, when I first saw this movie, it was probably a 3. And then I spent a good amount of time just listening to the score. I actually work out to the song where he has to get in the suit and get to the ship.
Dun, 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 dun,
it's great workout music. I started teaching myself the piano, and I listened to the score a lot because of the piano in it. And when I rewatched this movie, it went from a 3 to a 4.5 just because of how much I love the score and how much it accents the film so well. Even though, yes, the plot, where the plot goes, is bullshit, I love aspects with the score and the characters having to do certain things that make those scenes. I mean, after Dumbass arrives and he has to separate the ship and go through all that because Dumbass arrived, that scene is amazing, where Chris Evans is trying to get the ship back in the water and freezing, and Cillian has to get in the suit and get to the ship before it separates so he can blow up the payload. With the score going on, I'm like, okay, yeah, I understand plot-wise that's bullshit, but there's these awesome scenes that come out of this bullshit.
Yeah, it could have been any other reason
that
they're doing all this stuff, but all the stuff works.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, again, all in all, I guess we all agree that the beginning is great and the end, again, shit.
Yes. Okay, but can we also agree about the weird... I was so much more annoyed about the weird camera, the visuals of Mark Strong's character once he gets on. It's like, seriously, why does everyone have to have that weird strobing look? It's like,
because
it was really annoying.
He might not be real.
Yeah. Did you see how
just makes it worse?
Did you see how they filmed the scenes with like mirrors to get that weird look? That's all on camera, by the way.
Oh yeah, that makes sense to me, but I just don't like it.
Yeah. All right. So should we move on? Great Let's score on. Again. Amazing score. And
yeah, you've heard it in a lot of trailers that are escaping me at the moment.
Oh yeah. I think I actually put it on our music podcast. It's one of my favorite soundtracks.
Yeah.
It's really good.
All right. Then that leads us to 2008's
Slumdog
Millionaire.
Millionaire.
Yeah. I love this, the actor in this.
The way Anil Kapoor says millionaire is might be my favorite thing.
1 million
the movie.
Rupee. Yeah.
Millionaire.
All right. So quick score. Letterboxd score from 1 to 5, I give it a 4.5. And the half is for... I'll explain later. Jenny?
I keep going back and forth. I'm going to go with 4.
Okay. Adam? Letterboxd score.
I keep going back and forth between 3 and 2.5.
Wow.
I don't know what to tell you.
Tough to impress.
Brandon?
4.75.
Wow. No, you got to go Letterboxd style.
I pay Letterboxd to allow me a 4.75.
No.
Kevin did it.
Yeah, come on.
It was a good joke.
I'll give him a half. Right,
five.
Five.
Thank you. Jeez. Was that so hard?
Kevin?
Yeah, seriously. I would say it's between... I'm going to go 4.5 because I love the writing in this movie.
Yeah, I went 4.5.
Wait, so did you rewatch this one?
Yeah.
I did too.
It's funny.
Did everybody rewatch this one?
It's sad.
Yep.
No?
It takes me places. Yeah,
it was fresh in your mind?
Yeah.
Guys, Ricardo's fresh laying enough. His heart out.
Okay.
I loved it, dude. I cried.
Are you being facetious?
No, I didn't cry.
I was going to say.
This movie was just fun. And my main complaint really is about the Oscars. I don't think it should have... I don't think it was Best Picture good.
What was it up against? I don't even remember what it was up against.
I don't even care. It shouldn't have won Best Picture. I don't care what it is.
I saw it early at a screening at the Arclight with Danny Boyle.
I want to say There Will Be Blood was that year.
Was it?
I want to say.
2008?
No. There Will Be Blood and that other one. That other bloody one that didn't have blood in the title but was actually really bloody.
Okay. No Country for Old Men.
Yes, those two were up against each other.
Yes, you're right.
Thank you. Man.
No blood. Yeah. But it was really bloody, really.
Yeah.
All right, so I really enjoyed this movie. Again, back to digital with the cinematography.
But this looks awesome.
Nice. The colors look amazing. It's really vibrant and it pops. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's India.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the poop scene was really funny to me.
It is still funny.
Poop monster.
Those kids are great.
Yes, those kids are great.
Yeah.
Really good. We've skirted away from Danny Boyle's more controversial parts of his filming. Like, we didn't talk about it in the beach, but we may want to broach it here, the thing with the kids.
What was up with the kids?
Well, they had, supposedly they had paid, like, for their schooling. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they were going to do, is, like, pay for them to, like, go to a good school. Yeah. And, like, the money didn't really get to them.
And the beach?
And the beach, they actually, they reformed that beach.
That's
Which ruined the natural dunes. And they only like in 2008 or 9.
Was that
the tsunami?
Well, the tsunami fixed it, yeah. But they were in a lawsuit with the government of Thailand like up until 2009. Because, yeah, the tsunami went and made it all back the way it was again. Yeah. But they like just reformed the whole terrain to film the movie.
Yeah.
And people were upset about that. Oh, and they left behind a bunch of garbage.
No.
and with the kids, did they not pay for the schooling then?
I think they had problems with like the money getting to them or it being enough, and like maybe their parents taking a little bit of it and
it's India.
Not getting it to them.
It's like Thunderdome.
Oh, man, I was trying to be careful.
Hey,
but that was the thing. In hindsight, I thought I wouldn't enjoy it as much. Because I would think I would watch it again and be like, no, this is kind of ghetto porn.
Those kids are being
exploited. Yeah, those kids are being exploited.
I mean, they are.
It's like the tours that
they
do
really
like on a bus through South Central, like that sort of thing. Like that's why it's interesting, because you're like, oh, look at how poor these people are. Like that's the big thing about it.
Wait, they do that?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Fuck those people.
Yeah, they do bus tours through like where like you can go through the Rodney King intersection and yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's like the real life Seinfeld tour and the
wow.
Sex and the City tour.
I mean the Seinfeld tour I've heard and the Sex and the City tour I've heard of, but I didn't know they have like a ghetto tour.
Yeah, they have gang tours.
I knew that there's a tour in LA where they'll take you to like industrial zones where it's polluted.
Oh.
But I didn't know they had ghetto tours. That's fucked up.
Yeah. And so that's what I thought watching it again, I would kind of be thinking of that. Because usually that sort of thing happens in the second or third viewing. But no, I love every second of it.
Me too.
The kids are so good. The music is great.
Yeah.
I didn't need to watch it again. I remembered it exactly when I was like, all right, that was entertaining the first time. But I never need to watch a movie again. I feel like that's where I'm at where like how good a movie is. If I want to watch it over and over again, it's a really good movie. But I don't ever want to see it again. It's not that great.
I didn't think I would, but I really enjoyed the second time.
Me too. Me too. Yeah. I didn't. I thought I was gonna. It's gonna make. I'm having this problem at work. I watch a lot of movies. I have the ability to do that, and the more I watch the Avengers, the more I hate it. And I felt like with some movies, I'm like, oh fuck, like I don't want to rewatch it because I feel like my love of it will go down. But with this one, actually, it stayed the same. I enjoyed it just as much.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Also, my problem with it might just also be predicated again on the whole watching a bunch of Danny Boyle movies in a row.
That could be it. Yeah, yeah.
But this is a bright spot at the end of the rainbow. Yeah. This is like you watch it again and you're like, oh, that's right. This is what he's good at sometimes.
It wasn't like that for me. I was like, oh.
And also, coming off of Sunshine, you're like, oh, another Danny Boyle movie. Because he had fucked you twice with The Beach, with the bad ending. And now Sunshine. So those
wait,
two
okay,
movies.
So did everybody... Okay, so
well,
is everybody...
I would say the ending is not good here either.
I know the this well, is only the our dancing. Second episode, but is everybody dancing. Watching the movies in order?
I wasn't.
No. I kind of watched in order, yeah.
Okay, well, so... But you're the one arguing about the endings and the order. You didn't even watch them in order.
No, I'm just saying
order
the order of release.
Right.
Like, so when I first saw this movie in theaters, I was coming off of Sunshine.
Okay, well, I'm talking... As far as rewatching now and the order, I went... The Beach, Sunshine. Yeah, no. The Beach, Sunshine, and Slumdog. No. Four in a row. A Leftless Ordinary, Beach, Sunshine, Slumdog. I was like, I can't do any more Danny Boyle. I couldn't take it.
I enjoyed it. Loved it. Again, the guy who plays the show host, I don't know his name.
Anil Kapoor.
Fucking showman, man.
Oh, he's so good.
He's so good.
Millionaire.
Yeah. And just like his storyline too, just like he was a guy who came out of the slums as well. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
He didn't want... Yeah.
The editing is really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way good. If it deserved an Oscar, it deserved it for editing.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And really good transitions between the jumps in age. Like, because it's three different actors playing the same part at different ages. And I thought it was really well done how they kind of, like, the transition from, like, them kids and then they roll off the train and then when they get back up, they're older.
Yeah.
That was really well done. So.
And the, still though, the ending is really quick. For me,
yeah, it is
Salim killing himself.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in quote, all,
quote.
Yeah,
sacrificing himself.
Yeah, yeah. Sacrificing
suicide
himself.
Suicide by thugs.
Yeah. Suicide by thugs. Cops. Like that happens so quick. Like he meets back up with Jamal after so long, and then like a day later, he offs himself. Like at least in the movie, like timeline wise, it's just so quick from the point that he gets reunited with Jamal that he's willing to sacrifice himself for his happiness.
Yeah. But what I did hate the most was the dancing at the end.
Well, of course you would hate that.
Of course you would hate that.
Well, I hate dancing, first of all, just in general. Organized dancing. Like, dancing's cool.
Wait, what about Footloose?
Like, well, see, that again, that's not organized dancing. It's just one dude just showing his fucking emotions through the art of dance, you know? Well, when it's like more than
wait,
three...
Wait, there
it's
is organized dancing people, and at the prom.
At the end.
In every movie with a prom, there's organized dancing for some reason.
See, but it's not choreographed.
Not Carrie.
Yeah, they're all... Well, okay, not Carrie. Talking, Save the Last Dance. She's All That.
She's All That.
Oh.
All right.
Not prom night,
13
again,
going on 30.
If it's a horror movie
it's okay.
And it's the prom, there's no organized dancing. Yeah. Prom night, the remake of Prom Night, Carrie...
But this well, movie, I didn't need this. It took me out of it. I'm like, so...
Well, you're already
so
out of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
That's the point. Like, I like it. I like the dancing and music, but the way the credits are cut around it, it is like Save the Last Dance.
Yeah.
it feels really bad. The way, like, the image of the person comes over their name.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then cuts back to the dancing. Like, yes. Just the whole way it's done is weird.
I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Bollywood films, but is that an aspect of those? I could see that being an aspect.
They do it a lot better.
Well, they've had a little more practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... it's just weird. It just felt very Saturday morning.
Complaints? Any complaints? Well, we don't need to hear from Adam.
I was going
to
say... Well, okay, I don't.
Isn't that what we've been doing?
I don't. But I haven't even been talking that much about this one. I don't know. I just don't. It's not even.
What do you like about it?
I enjoy parts of the story, and I do think the kids are really good. I don't know. It's just like it's not my favorite. Like I didn't. It doesn't stick with me. I'm not like, oh, I really want to watch Slumdog. I'm so like, all right, I saw it.
It surprised me. I feel like I felt the same way, but I watched it again because I wanted to rewatch it, and I was like, oh yeah, I really love this.
Okay. I feel like I'd rather watch Bollywood movies. Like, I'd rather discover something new than rewatch Slumdog again.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather watch something made by an Indian.
I'm going to say something really horrible.
Native now. American.
No, I'm an Indian.
From India.
From Native India.
American.
This whole movie, and even on the rewatch, all I could think about was, fuck, I really want some Indian food. That's all I
can There's that scene where he's stealing the naan bread from the guy on the train.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's all I wanted during that scene.
Like, I want some fucking naan and I want some tandoori chicken. But yeah, besides that, like, there's a couple things that I didn't like, but I liked the digital. It worked well. All the acting was great by everybody. Just got some great performances. I think maybe the only weak link is the guy who plays his brother. What's his name? Salim. Yeah. The older Salim. Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides that,
he's not as good as Dev Patel.
Dev Patel kind of rocked it.
Ifrin Khan is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Frida Pinto.
I could do better.
She's controversial.
She's barely. Like,
I know. She's barely.
Once it gets to that. Well, that's the problem. Once you get to the older characters, like, you just get a lot of time with Dev Patel, but you don't get a lot of time with Salim.
Yeah.
The older Salim and the older Latika.
Yeah.
So it's like, whatever. They're just kind of secondary. Yeah. Like, they don't matter anymore.
You don't even get a ton with Dev Patel. I'd like to know what the screen time is for the kids versus
adult Dev compared Patel. To the other two characters, you get more time with him because you're getting him being tortured.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. That's so now we're quietly moving on to
2010s. 127 hours.
Yeah. It's going to get real, guys.
Which I had never seen.
Really?
Wow. I had never seen it. I know.
Until
now.
The podcast.
Tell the podcast.
Wow, okay.
Tell watching this. This is the shameless one.
Okay, so Letterboxd rating, I give 127 hours 4 stars. Jenny? Don't yell at
it. Back and forth. I think I'm going to go with 4.5.
Ooh, nice. All right. Adam?
I didn't rewatch this one, so I'll give it 3.
Wow. All right.
5 stars.
Brandon, 5 stars. Kevin?
4.5.
Four and a half. All right. That's solid. We can't factor in Adam's score because, you know, you're so jaded against fucking Danny Boyle.
It's his fault. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
It's his fault.
It is his fault.
But this
he made these movies.
This movie's unreal.
Again, digital.
Digital.
Who was it written by? Does anybody know?
It's Simon Burfoy and Danny,
oh,
I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Simon.
And co-DP Anthony Dodd Mantle and Enrique Chediak.
Yeah, yeah.
So that neither one got too stressed out.
Yeah. It was extremely claustrophobic to film some of those scenes. And I think he liked to... he talked a lot about shooting, like jumping between units. And just...
Yeah.
So he gets more out of the day, basically.
Also, it gave Franco, like, a bit larger sense. If he was there more, it gave him a better sense of the experience of being stuck in there.
This is the one I saw with Danny Boyle Q&A. And I know Franco... It's funny, because people give Franco a lot of shit, and from the stuff he's directed, there's not a lot that I've liked, but... hearing Danny Boyle talk, he's like, he definitely knows, like, the pace of a movie. I don't know why he doesn't implement it, but when he directs,
I mean, I haven't seen his newer stuff, but his older stuff, he was learning.
Yeah, that's true. But he talked about Danny Boyle talked about how there's scenes that the film that aren't in the movie. And Franco was like, he's like, we're going to film it because it's in the script and we'll do whatever you want to do. He's like, but I know it's not going to work because of this, this, and that. And he's all, yeah, once we got into the editor room, he's like, it's weird that he fucking knew like the emotional temperature of the character in the movie. Like it just, the tone of it didn't work. And
well, I feel like, stuff. I feel like James Franco wants to do so much.
Yeah.
Like he wants to try everything, which is great.
Yeah.
But that just means that you're not going to be as into everything you do.
Yeah.
Like it's
yeah.
just, that's how it's going to work.
Yeah.
So when he's into something, he's amazing.
Yeah.
And he is amazing in this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I, there's nothing I love more than a guy in a room.
Yes.
Like a guy or two guys just in a room for a movie for 90 minutes.
Like The Room?
Like The Room. It is.
Especially The Room.
5 stars.
So.
No, a good movie.
The synopsis. If you haven't seen this movie, you should. It's fun. It's
true interesting. Story.
A true story. A guy goes
very
out.
Very true story.
Goes out kind of on this trek.
Canyoneer.
And through circumstance, he doesn't take a cell phone. He doesn't tell anybody where he's going. And he gets stuck between a rock and a hard place, literally.
He couldn't resist.
And he's stuck there. And it's the 127 hours that precede that, him getting stuck.
And I love in the movie how it's like the 20 minutes of setup. And yeah. then there's
We're
no...
Not to precede that. That come after that.
They come after.
Yeah, yeah.
There's 20 minutes of setup, and then the title card comes in the second he's stuck.
Yeah.
And it says 127 hours.
Yeah.
That was perfect.
Yeah, yeah. Just it feels very claustrophobic.
Super claustrophobic.
It feels that way.
I didn't rewatch the movie just because... I mean, I feel like it's viscerally just burned in my brain.
I was uncomfortable
the
entire time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was never, and especially up until he falls in, because you know he's going to fall sometime and get his hand caught, and you're just like, oh, God, it's going to hurt my dessert. And then it happens, you're like, oh, fuck, now he's going to be stuck there for 127 hours.
Before we move on to the scene that we want to talk about, James Franco, I feel, is like a wild card when it comes to acting. Like, if you don't know, if you're not a director who can really control people, I feel like, he can run amok and be a little like a wild card.
Yeah.
I feel like him. I feel about him like I feel about, and I'll say it. I don't want to compare the two, but I feel the same way with like Brando. Like when he doesn't have a strong director to contain him, like Elie Kazan, he's fucking running wild, or like Coppola, who like knows how to use him and how to contain him. And Danny Boyle definitely knew how to use James Franco and gets amazing performance out of him. And the scene where he has to, spoiler alert, cut his arm off is fucking intense.
Yeah. Well, and two guys that are all about experience.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Danny Boyle talking about Slumdog is all about, like, oh, we have to be talking about getting the shots, you know, in the slums. Like, you have to be in there. You have to, like, be with the people, and you have to experience it for yourself and all this stuff. And 127 hours, like him and Franco, that's all that it's about.
Yeah.
Is what it was like.
Yep.
Do you want to play a clip of the part where he's going nuts and he does the radio interview with himself?
Yes.
Oh, I love that scene.
Which is like day 3 or 4.
Let's play it.
Good morning, everybody out there. Steve, Tom.
It's the morning show. Ryan Stevenson
is also coming up this half hour.
Good morning. It's up and going today, 90 for you.
Good morning, everyone. It is 7 o'clock here in Canyonland, USA. And this morning, on the Boulder, we have a very special guest, self-proclaimed American superhero, Aaron Ralston! Let's hear it for Aaron!
Hey. Hi. Oh, gosh. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thank you. hey, can I say hi to my mom and dad?
Mom and dad? Mustn't forget mom and dad, right, Aaron?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Mom. I'm really sorry I didn't answer the phone the other night. If I had, I would have told you where I was going, and then... Well, I probably wouldn't be here right now.
That's for sure!
And, it's funny, watching the making of and all this, doing research on it, Aaron saved the tapes. You know, he only showed them to like his mom, whoever he talked about in the tape, he showed them to. And he said they're too personal for me, so he put them in the safe deposit box, and never listened to them again, watched them again, until the movie. And he went and he took a DV camera, and he took them out of the safe deposit box. He let James Franco and Danny Boyle watch them, and then he put them back in the safe deposit box. And never, he doesn't ever want.
So that's all that stuff.
Yeah,
is in the video.
Yeah, yeah. So it's intense. The sound design. The nerve.
Oh, yeah. When he's going to cut the nerve, and it's that feedback. That was brilliant. I mean, because you're already just writhing. The whole thing, I'm just uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll never watch it again.
And it's not something where you can just close your eyes and not watch it. The sound is just as worse.
Yeah, and that makes it so much more powerful. Because then he hits just like...
What's funny, because I think they expected that. Like, oh, a lot of people are going to close their eyes, so let's... Make sure we get them with a freaking sound.
Fuck those guys.
Yeah. But really well done. The ending, again, this one doesn't disappoint for me. It works. Loved it.
It's so powerful. Yeah. The whole ending. Yeah. It really, like, the first time I saw it, I immediately was like, I need to rethink my life right now. Like, I totally need to rethink some things.
I had, like, a couple.
Are you sure you always tell someone where you're going?
I know.
A couple nights later, I was with friends that do this all the time. They go mountain climbing and around, they go bouldering and stuff like that. And I asked, it's kind of a letdown because I asked them, like, do you see it? Like, does that make you scared at all? And they're like, no, like, that is the odds of that happening. Like, the odds are in favor of you just dying.
Yeah.
So the odds of you getting stuck like that are so low that you can't be afraid of that. You'll probably just die.
Yeah.
So they just make sure they have two knives.
Yeah.
If he had died, they would have said he died doing what he loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like when I have a heart attack and I die, they'll be like, well, he died doing what he loved, eating.
Breathing with his hand.
Yeah, breathing with his hand. Died.
Just like
the king, but with a burrito.
Just that... Danny Boyle does it a couple times to put you in context. Oh. There's the shot of him of he's screaming and you just pull back into nowhere. Like he does in Slumdog, he does it in The Beach and stuff. But
he talks about
it's painful.
In one of he has multiple interviews with Elvis Mitchell on the treatment. I don't remember which one he talks about this specifically. I guess it's probably the one closest to when 127 Hours came out. But he talks about being from the city, having a mistrust for nature. Like, he doesn't like being out in the country. And they talk about his mistrust and dislike of the country adding to the paranoia about being out in the open country in general. Yeah. And I did find that interesting. That was what made me, even though that I listened to that today, I'm like, all right, well, shit, maybe I should have rewatched 127 Hours.
I
do appreciate that.
I, again, just like you said, that rings true to me. I definitely was born and raised in the city. I don't like nature. I drove. Remember, Jenny, when we were in the Grand Canyon, and I freaked out because I thought a bug bit me, and I thought I was gonna die.
Oh yeah.
I was like seriously like fucking scared. Like I felt something bite me in my leg.
I think you're gonna have to look at my ass. I think you're gonna have to actually look at it.
It was in my thigh, and I'm like, just look.
I'm not gonna look at your ass. Good luck. If it bit you, it bit you.
It was in my thigh.
If it bit you, it bit you. Okay.
And I was terribly paranoid. And then actually,
at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
It felt like you were in Brazil.
We were, it was at night though.
It's still the Grand Canyon.
There's nobody else around.
That's when the bugs come out that are just the same as the day once.
Yeah, right? They're crazy.
The ghost bugs come out at night.
Yeah.
And Jenny got crazy too.
Then you just become a ghost.
This movie, like Ghost Dad.
Beautiful segue.
But love this. I have no complaints about this movie.
I love a movie that I know I will never have the desire to watch again.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
But that I love it so much because I'm uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like when I got so scared of Blair Witch Project.
You'll never watch Blair Witch Project.
I bought it at Blockbuster because it was on sale for like $5, like 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I never watched the DVD. I sold it.
You're scared?
Yeah, see.
I was too scared.
If a movie's good, I'll rewatch it. if I really love it.
But I guess what I'm saying is the regardless experience, of how uncomfortable it makes like me. The experience of it was so singular, I kind of don't want the second viewing to diminish that. Like to be less uncomfortable in the second viewing. I want to hold that first experience.
That just sounds masochistic.
So you don't ever want to have little sex bit, yeah. ever again?
I haven't.
You're like, hold on to that experience.
Yeah, once is enough, right, guys?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
It was great that time, right? Yeah. That's as good as it gets? Better,
yeah. That's as good as it gets.
Yeah. You tell me if I wasn't.
I'll tell you.
You guys are being honest, right?
Yeah, no, just keep replaying that moment.
I don't know what you're talking about. My mom listens to this. I've never been with a woman.
You've never been.
You're waiting for marriage.
Yeah, I'm waiting for marriage.
You're saving yourself for marriage. All right. Let's move on to 2012. London Olympics. He was there.
That's not a movie.
Before the London.
This is not a movie.
Well, it's not, but it's worth noting a little bit, and I have a clip. But
we don't want to hear a clip.
Kenneth Branagh greeting from the Tempest as Britain's greatest industrialist. No. We don't want to hear any of that. Okay, fine. But he did the stage version of Frankenstein.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
Which is remarkable because it was Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller later to fight over the Sherlock Wars of 2012.
Yeah,
and it was a stage show where one night, you know. Benedict Cumberbatch would play the monster and Johnny Lee Miller would play Dr. Frankenstein and then they would switch the next night and Johnny Lee Miller would play the creature and Benedict Cumberbatch would play Dr. Frankenstein.
Which, right, but that's audience, not unique to this show, though.
No, Sam Shepard and
Was
doing all the time. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
John C. Reilly and...
John C. Reilly and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Would trade off all the time. But, and that actually, what they would do is before the play started, they would flip a coin.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's even...
Well, here it's like...
Badass.
You want to see Benedict Cumberbatch as the monster, which is...
it sucks for the audience. Like, I want to see both.
Yeah.
Got to buy two tickets.
Well, yeah, but at least then you know that you bought it for the next night, you would be getting that show rather than the
coin toss. For a Broadway show, though, you're like, oh, I didn't know. Can I get a refund and come back the next night and see? You just got to keep coming back and hope that the coin falls in your favor.
Yeah, if you keep doing the coin toss, at least this way you know. Anyway, did anyone else watch it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I did. I did, too.
What did you think?
Boobies. I liked it. people think like I'm fucking childish. No. It was really cool. That's all I talk about. It was cool.
Very cool.
From what I saw, we
really excited about it.
Full disclosure,
but not because of the Danny.
We saw a pirate copy.
Yes, it was the only way.
Shh, the BBC is gonna come get us.
Yes, it was the only way to see it. I'll go get a ticket for the Theater Live when they broadcast it again. Mostly because I want to see the other one with Johnny Lee Miller as the monster.
We donate to something.
Yes.
Charity.
Better. Yes.
I mean, someone just taped it off of when they aired it. I mean, that was never illegal when you taped something off of HBO when it was a one-time thing. So I don't see what the difference
is. Well, but this is a video camera.
You borrowed it from... Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, because the National Theatre, which is what it was for, the National Theatre of London.
But it was them
they
taping,
broadcasted
it
via satellite.
Right.
So you had the stage production, someone filming the stage production.
Right.
Being broadcast here, mm-hmm. and then someone filming that broadcast.
Okay.
So it's like a fourth generation copy.
Wow, that's really tacky. That's like how my grandma had me make her a copy of Cop and a Half.
she wanted you to record off the TV, but then she's like, I only have a Betamax, so I recorded off the VCR onto a Betamax.
No, so I played it on the TV, and I recorded the TV with the video camera.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And I was like, wait, how old was I when Cop and a Half came out? I was like 10.
Did you...
Too old.
Did you walk by the camera just to add that experience?
No, I didn't. No, but I'm sure you can probably hear me laughing. Laughing. No, I had a tripod. I was professional.
Oh, good.
But you can hear me laughing in the background. They can't arrest me for that because I was 10, right?
Statute of limitations. Yeah. Okay. Have not dried up.
all right. So really quickly, London Olympics. That was fun.
He directed the opening thing, which is called The Isles of Wonder.
Yeah.
And if the video intro is classic Danny Boyle going from under the sea up over the shore, fast paced travel into the London city center where the Olympics are.
Yeah.
That's like the video intro. And then it's like it's a celebration of the industrial history of Britain, mm-hmm. The NHS.
It's also like 5 fucking hours long.
It is really long.
There's no way I was going to watch that. Sorry.
Like the opening ceremony is ridiculously long?
Yeah.
Yeah, the opening ceremony is always really long.
Even on YouTube. There's not even like a, just watch a
best clip. Of.
Did I just like out myself? Because
yeah. They come
never
down.
Watches the Olympics.
They come down on that stuff hard. Yeah.
Man, fucking 5 hours.
It was the only part of the Olympics that I watched, and it is insane.
You can watch it all on YouTube, though. It's one video.
I'm good.
I don't want to I'm see done. It.
The design is really impressive.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the only one sticking up for the London opening ceremony.
Is there just like one the section of it that I could watch and get like
James
a
Bond.
Good part of it?
That's like the first 45 seconds.
There you
that's
go. All you need so to you watch. Only need 45
that's
seconds.
A, yeah, I was hoping to get like
the industrialist
of part of it.
The part about Britain's industrial complex, mm-hmm. like the rise of British industrialism, is actually really amazing.
Boring.
The
where
staging,
is that in it?
The stage is at the very beginning. The okay. staging of it is super amazing.
It is, but let's move on. Okay. It's not a movie.
But it's what he was. It's the reason why the next movie wasn't in New York because he had to stay in London for the opening ceremony.
How long do they give you to like plan the opening ceremony? You know, like
oh, that shit's going on for like. 4 years at least.
Really?
Yeah.
So they started the like time, right when the last one ends.
From the time they got the Olympics, like
in
London. I'm sure he was signed on a month or so later. Like they start that really early. There's actually a really great.
Does it all take place in that stadium? Sorry, I have lots of questions.
No, it does, yeah.
I'm hoping the next time America gets the Olympics, Don Hertzfeldt gets to do the opening ceremony.
Yes.
Guys, Terrence Malick.
No.
It's all still.
It's going to take
maybe
like
a year-long opening ceremony.
He's like, I want wheat fields to be grown in the stadium, and then we're just going to one shot just through the wheat field. Really, really still, guys.
Wind.
We need wind machines. Huge wind machines. All right, so this leads us to 2013's...
His latest movie.
Trance.
Can we just call it Vagina?
Yes.
Bald Vagina, the movie.
Shaved Vagina, the movie.
Guys, Goya introduced humanistic females.
This movie,
sorry, let's do the plot synopsis of Trance.
Plot synopsis is... You want to give a synopsis?
A clusterfuck of an art historian, thief, and hypnotist stealing a Goya painting.
Yes. Everything was kind of confusing and boring. Until the vagina came out. And then I was like, oh, that's interesting. Rosario Dawson naked. I'd seen her before, but, you know.
But you even hear the buzz.
Yeah.
What is that? Why?
The context is that Goya, there's a painting by Goya, whose name escapes me from the movie, that is regarded as being the introduction of pubic hair on females. Because before, females were depicted as really angelic and like of a pure
perfect,
form.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this made them really human. Like yeah. More, you know, cluttered. That's the wrong word, but just more human. And he hated that for some reason.
Yeah.
And... So she knew that, and she's playing with him, so she gives him what he wants, and that's a bald hoo-ha.
Yeah. All right. You went childish with...
There it is.
Yeah.
A
hairless,
bald hoo-ha.
Hairless hoo-ha. Should have gone for the alliteration, but hey, yeah. Don't have a time machine.
So that was interesting, and then here's the thing. Vinta Cassell is always interesting to me.
He's always good.
Him read the phone book.
But it...
Okay.
The
Vincent Cassell part is like my biggest problem with the movie. Because not him as the problem,
yeah,
but like the whole movie being predicated upon, okay, so it's overly convoluted and they're trying to make it look like James McAvoy is like the good guy.
Yeah.
And I know from the very beginning.
Well, but only for a few minutes.
That he's not. No, like they're listen to his interview with Elvis Mitchell. They want you to think that he's a good guy until like two-thirds of the way through.
But it's like...
And he's clearly not. Like, right away, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like not even half, like, a minute and a half into the movie, when he shocks Vincent Cassell, I'm like, oh, okay, he's clearly the bad guy. Like, I know exactly what's happening. And
right.
All the overly convoluted bullshit, I'm like, all right, so you're just making much ado about nothing, because I know what's happening.
Yeah, the problem is, like, any psychological thriller where it's like, okay, here's a good guy, and now we're going to do something that makes you think they're the bad guy, it never ends up actually being... That guy's the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's always a red herring of some kind, and some things are going to change. But it starts that way, and then it's all like, ordinarily you'd be peeling away layers of a thing, but it's like building it in reverse,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Well, from the trailer, I could tell that Vincent Cassell is really the good guy, and James McAvoy is the bad guy. Maybe I just don't like James McAvoy. I mean, I'm okay with him in like Atonement, or as Professor X maybe, but like, I just, like I could tell from the show, I'm like, all right, well, Ben Ziegesell's the guy we're rooting for, and James McAvoy's the douche.
Yeah.
The only thing that was a surprise is that he beat her. I'm like, oh, that's why he's, spoiler alert.
But that's like the thing that you show at the very beginning to play against. Like, that's not, it just doesn't feel like a big enough reveal.
I would have rather just followed Vincent Cassell's character the whole time. Like, he should have been the protagonist, because I liked that character, and I would have been much more willing to go along with him for the whole movie.
Because you find out James McAvoy was in a relationship with Rosario Dawson's hypnotist, and the whole thing hinges on hypnotism being this thing that's like...
that works amazingly.
It's like going to the store.
Yeah. Everybody's a hypnotist. Everybody gets hypnotized all the time.
So, Letterboxd rating. We didn't even do the Letterboxd rating, but Letterboxd rating half because it, just to get on the boards. Jenny?
I did 2.5 just because I liked the ending.
You liked the vagina?
That's the part.
You liked the ending?
Yeah, I actually liked the ending. I didn't see it coming. I was surprised.
Well, the stuff with the ending, because James McAvoy's character is gone.
Yeah, I hated the beginning.
The ending with Rosario Dawson leaving things open for Vince Cassell, I agree, right?
Yes.
Yeah, when
push this button and that will erase your memory, or I want you to come find me.
Oh, well, that part. But also, right when it started, where she's explaining to him everything that happened. Like
about their relationship and everything?
Yeah, that's when I started. I liked it from there.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming either, but like, I feel like it's kind of like... I feel like it's just like a giant fart, kind of. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like the thing...
The entire ending is exposition.
Of the movie. Yeah.
You can't... Your ending can't be exposition.
It's revealing a thing. It's surprising because nothing ever at all indicates that that is a thing.
Don't ever compare things to fart because there's so many different kinds of farts. Silent but deadly.
Okay.
There's the really loud but not stinky.
The... unexpectedly wet fart.
Yeah, okay. The shart.
Unexpectedly.
Okay. What's your rating?
Wait, you skipped over. Wait, what was yours?
Jenny's was 2.5?
2.5.
2.5.
1.
Adam's 1. Brandon?
1.
Kevin?
I gave it 2 vaginas.
Nice. That really sums it up, really. Like, that's the only memorable thing with the movie. It was the vagina. Like, the shaved vagina. And I'm like, did she get extra money for shaving? Like, is that in her contract? Like, well...
I don't think Rosario has a problem with...
Rosario naturally doesn't really shave down there.
It's hazard pay.
It's hazard pay. What if she had gotten cut while she was razoring it, you know? And does she do it, or does the costume lady?
Is that a union thing?
Is it a union thing?
It's a razor bump.
Okay. So, highlights of this movie: Vincent Cassell, who's top notch as an actor, and
if it meant anything, the editing would be good.
It doesn't mean anything.
But it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, not in this movie.
If it did it in favor of something, it would be good.
Okay,
because so stuff kind of flows a little bit, but it doesn't mean anything.
And this is what I was talking about coming back to my problem with John Hodge, because he wrote this one also.
Yeah.
Well, with a story by, and this is all full circle. This was written before Shallow Grave, like the story was. Joe Ahern, the guy who was co-writing credit, wrote it before Shallow Grave, and Danny Boyle was like, I don't really think that's a thing. But then he brought it back to him, and John Hodge worked on it a little bit, and he was like, yeah, all right, I'll do it.
Well, John Hodge didn't save this script, because it's just ridiculously convoluted shit piled on top of each other. I'm just like,
yeah, just for the sake of being so.
Yeah, and I've heard... John Hodge is a doctor. Like, he's a medical doctor. And he wrote this movie about...
Oh, that, like Dr. Dre.
Hypnotism.
About hypnotism. God, that's the thing that kills me about this movie, is the hypnotism.
How much... Like, seriously, just that... hypnotism. It's fucking hypnotism. Your entire movie hinges on hypnotism.
Yeah. You had me at nothing. all right. So, we all agree on this one, at least? That
it's a crappy movie.
It didn't make any sense how she wasn't nervous to be around him anymore.
Yeah. Yahtzee.
That's what didn't make any sense. I mean, even if she did change his mind, technically, that doesn't go away.
Yeah.
If you get beat up by a guy, that doesn't go away. Sorry.
That's what I mean. Like, there's nothing in... It's the reason why I hate, like, the Shyamalan twist ending. Because he'll do a thing where there's no indication that it should... If something happens, you should be able to look back and see all the pieces kind of fall into place.
Well, you talking about his later films, or his...
I'm talking about everything. Sixth Sense is the only one that works.
Unbreakable works. What are you talking about?
Nah, Unbreakable. But it's not really a...
Signs works.
Oh, I hate Signs.
Oh, fuck you, dude. All right.
Okay, let's not
get into that. Yeah, let's not get into that. Yeah.
All right. So we all agree, not a good movie. So that concludes.
Great trailer, though.
Yeah, great trailer. I do agree with that.
The trailer's awesome.
I didn't like I didn't see this in theaters because the trailer didn't interest me at all.
I thought the trailer looked great.
Yeah, yeah. But definitely looking forward to, just a side note, not Danny Boyle movie, the new James McAvoy movie. I think it's called Filth or something.
Yeah.
Looks amazing. And has like a Danny Boyle feel to it, though.
Trailer's kind of like Trance, well, so it's all up in the air as far as
I'm
concerned.
Isn't it a Welsh book?
It might be. Filth? Yeah. So there you
Danny
go.
Danny Boyle's next project, though, just as an aside, is a TV series. He's going to do the pilot for a police drama, which is going to be filming later this year.
What is that?
Yeah, that's all I know.
So nothing.
Nothing. Airs in 2014. It's his next project. What do you want from me?
All right. Okay. So again, follow the podcast on Twitter at the Film Podcast. In a couple weeks, we're going to be having part two of our Cannes Film Group series, and hopefully we're going to get some guests coming up soon once we get to the newer films on that one. You could find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
I'm at Janae, JEHNEIGH.
I'm at Ann Adam Scott, @_AdamScott.
At BL Bennett.
I'm at KZUBERBIER.
There you go. And, If you want, tweet us some of your suggestions for upcoming directors we should go through, and you know, for the next episode of Director's Cut. Yeah, we have some ideas. Maybe a little Spike Lee. I don't know. We'll see. But until next time, hey, have a good week.